Are you ready for WWE to take over your ears? Hosted by former pro wrestler Rick Nash. The Rick says.
And award-winning radio DJ, Mr. Don Marnell.
Sports commentator and one-time Lowe's Bud of the Year, David Kent.
Day, Kent.
And Bray Wyatt's one true love, Jade Costello.
What does everybody want?
Jade!
What does everybody need?
Jade!
YouTube star Corporate King.
This elephant has four legs. Joe Ross has four legs. Joseph Stalin, if he had two more legs.
Bonesaw rips off his shirt, yeah? And it says, Chuck your law, big dirty toy player.
And the queen of Irish wrestling. Katie Harvey.
I want one to sign. Just CM
I'm
Punk.
I'm so
or...
embarrassed. CM Punk.
It's Low Blows. Bravo!
Very special intro for a very special show because 7 years and now 300 episodes, not including stuff like Ask Low Blows and the other stuff we produced on the Low Blows Network. This is the 300 flagship we've done 300 episodes ago after many pints that I can confirm were class. The week before WrestleMania 30, myself and the one and only Don Marnell decided to put our money where our mouths were and boldly go where every white man ever has. We decided to start a podcast. And since then, we've made Maven relevant again. We actually had merch at one stage. We got raided by the Gardaí in a story that made national media. We got banned from Nigeria. I've just done a checkup on that with Perarudi today to see if the ban was lifted. I hope to have some good news, but no response. He's leaving me on scene still. We started a band at one stage. We created and followed through with not one, but two professional wrestling themed masses. We killed a wrestling promotion and we reacted to one of our co-hosts breaking both of their arms and being told their career was over by launching a campaign slandering them for being racist publicly. Although we did cheer for your comeback though, Katie, so we're not bad friends or anything. And that, guys, is just the first 300 episodes. Not a bad haul for a measly wrestling podcast, and I want to start this episode of Low Blows by thanking every single one of you for supporting us through our weird, random and wonderful journey through the world of professional wrestling. But as we get kicked off here, on the 300th edition and 7th anniversary of the Low Blows podcast, Rick Nash, Corporate Keen, Katie Harvey in the house as always. Guys, when I say the words Low Blows to you, what's the memory or story that immediately comes to mind? Katie, I feel bad after like saying all of that out loud. So I'm going to start with you, Katie. This is really important to me and I value the things you say. Please don't ever sue us.
That never crossed my mind, but aren't all these archived?
There's evidence, so much evidence. We're dead to rights.
I'm going to take it back to when I first started on Low Blows, my memory. And I don't think I've ever talked about this with you, because we've talked about memories a lot recently, it seems, but I don't think I've ever talked about this to you. And it was either my like first week or second week doing Low Blows. And I don't know if I ever told you how nervous I was about coming on to do this podcast, because I didn't know if I could keep up and I didn't know if I was funny and I didn't know if I could like talk off the cuff, because every podcast I had done up until that point was an interview style. And like when you're a wrestler doing an interview, you can almost guarantee like the five questions you're going to get asked, you know, what's your favorite match? Who's your dream opponent? Like you can like verbatim for most interviews. So I was really nervous, and we played a game after I started, and I think it was, I can't remember the game, but I remember my answer anyway was, I did a fake ad for a personal injury lawyer, about wrestling fans getting their feelings hurt.
I remember, Jesus.
And I got like a genuine laugh from both of you. And then the next day, Justy tweeted me and he was like, can't believe I just spat my drink out listening to Katie Harvey tell a funny story. This is a new low or something along them lines. And I just remember that was the moment where I was like, because like I was planning to quit. I was like, I'm shite at this. Like I am not cut out for the podcasting world. And I remember that one game and that one moment and like getting genuine laugh and just being like, okay, no, you know what? Maybe I can manage this. Maybe once a week I can just fucking put enough work in and like struggle through a 2-hour podcast.
And little did you know, all you had to do was just show up and get slagged. And like,
turns out it wasn't the wrestling fans who got their feelings hurt. It was me.
No. Like, to be fair, also as well, like your record speaks for itself. You're the one person in Low Blow's history to put Justy in this place on air. So that's like an achievement that none of us can say. Do you know what I mean? You made Corper Keen mark out by bringing Melina into the show at one stage.
Oh, but those gaffes though about like that is that like that was back when I was like nice to Katie. I was nice to Katie up until like the Queen versus Keen stuff started. So could you imagine if Katie came in with that level of confidence and I was just like, yeah, you're shit. Well,
amazing. Well, look, you're one of the gang, and I think this is probably we kind of and for those who aren't in the Zoom with us, we started the show, and we're going to include this in the main show at the very end. We started the show with a bunch of throwback moments. We're going through the full 7 years with all the different hosts we've had and stuff like that. I think you guys are the longest reigning Low Blows hosts now, like consecutively. So like you've lasted, and not only have you lasted, you've lasted the longest out of any of the hosts. So fair play, respect. You're one of us now, Katie, and you know that once we start slagging you, you're in the gang. Like that's it. Like
I must be in a lot of gangs and a lot of places.
I've weirdly never felt so popular in my life. Corby Keane, what's your memory when you think of Low Blows?
Sitting on Randy Orton's face.
I had a feeling that it was going to be something about like how disappointed you were when you first showed up to the Low Blows HQ or something like that. I knew it was going to be like scenery related.
I was blown away. It was a Randy Orton chair that I've never seen a Randy Orton chair in my life, and like not before that or since. So I mean, it's quite a rarity, to be fair. It's only summer 2018 to now is like just short of 3 years. Yeah. But like when you're in your like late teens, especially early 20s, like that three years is a long time. Like a lot happens in those 3 years. So like I get mad nostalgic whenever I think back in the old place. Like, yeah. it's a proper throwback. Do you know what I mean? Like fucking, I was actually going out today. Like what is my earliest Low Blows memory? Like I went back to the start and like the first show I ever did, like in the Low Blows HQ, like it's fucking, it's so mad to think about, like, you know what I mean? Like it's just, I don't know, I just think it's, yeah, it's deadly. Like
I'll never forget Keen coming in, because I don't know what Keen thought he was going to be, like he was gonna get, but he walked in like, and I'm like, oh yeah, we're taping here, and then it's my bedroom, like, and we just had a little studio set up in the corner, not even a studio, it's like a table with a sound desk and stuff on it, and then he's like looking around waiting for the studio, and he's like, I thought there was gonna be like, you know, a big actual studio. So I'm like, no. I'm like, we're a really small podcast.
I was expecting a big low, like a big Low Blows, like, you know, painted the
Sky Sports
wall.
News Center.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, and you know what, Scott? Sky Sports News Center isn't even real either. Like all these fucking, like the Match of the Day studio and all that, that's actually just green screens. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, there's just people working in the background, like running from desk to desk, like getting us our stories, writing the content, and then you're like, no, it's just us in like a bedroom. I think back to like there's so many, obviously, like over the years, and there's different eras of Low Blows and stuff like that. Like we started taping in DCU, I think it was in Don's old college studio, like back in the day. Then we recorded like in the HQ the Keen will come to know. Me and Jade used to have little, like, you know, we'd record the show on a Monday, but then it'd be like the show would be an excuse for us to hang out and just have like a bitching session about everything that was going on in wrestling at the time, like, and just like share all the goss we had and stuff like that. It literally became that. And then there was Scott, he was on the show as well. Kento obviously was a host for a period of time, and then of course the new era, like, and I think of Buskers then, I think of stuff like, now we have a lot of questions in Ask Low Blows where we'll tell more stories, but like I think of stuff like being in Buskers and like staff walking by. I remember once, actually, do you guys know where I'm going to go with this, where the staff member walking by and I just turn around and I'm like, I don't know what I said. I said something so inappropriate, like if you didn't get the context of the conversation, I'm like, just pulled out a tampon or something like that. I just like, and the staff member just went, what? And Keith's like, what did you do?
I think it was like, was it like Priscilla Kelly or one of them on the indies, like,
yes,
use a tampon as a weapon or like a bit of Ada or something or some mad shit like that. It was some really mad like moment, and we were talking about it, and it was like the staff member was coming by, and it was no context. It was just sort of like, that's
he attacked him with a bloody tampon.
Yeah,
it's just like, what? Like, you know, looking and Keenan and Katie are like, of course. Just like, no, yeah. Amazing memories. We can't wait to share more in our Slow Blows. We do have a big show though, so we're not gonna just wax lyrical for a few hours, guys. Though by all means, we do want you to use the chat if you're on Zoom with us on our webinar, if you want to like share your own memories and stuff like that as well, like even from live shows or just in general. But first off, I want to say thank you to everyone who supported. It's been such a crazy week. Thank you to everyone who supported Low Blows Mania 9 at the weekend. Really, really happy with how it went, and we're getting a lot of great feedback. The WrestleMania Rewind in particular, people seem to be responding to, so loads of fun. Thank you to everyone who participated. Katie, you did both nights and ended up getting delayed like on the second night because we ran long, because of course we did. We literally finished like as they were singing the WrestleMania national anthem on Sunday, like we're like, shit, we're finishing TLC 2, we're finishing it. So thank you to everyone who supported. Just to say, like, repeat what I said on social media afterwards, the virtual things, like even when we're back to normal, and the plan is to get back to normal next year for the Royal Rumble party, that's the hope. We're going to continue doing virtual parties, but even when we do get back to normal, we're going to keep some of our virtual elements. How we do that, we'll figure it out as we go along, but I really enjoyed a lot of the stuff, like the WrestleMania Rewind, getting to go over classic matches. I think it put us all right in the mood for WrestleMania then, that when we're just getting the fresh matches then. We're definitely going to be doing more stuff like that in the future, so thank you for your support. If there's feedback or stuff you guys want to give, we want to hear it as well. Like if there's more, you want more of this or you want less of this or whatever, please do share. But thank you for joining us, guys. Big show this week. It's WrestleMania week, so we have so much to discuss, even if it wasn't a special anniversary show. But I do want to mark the fact that it's 300 episodes, and on Ask Low Blows we're going to do a pretty much a throwback show. You have been very kind to ask us a lot of Low Blows team questions, so we're going to be telling stories and reminiscing and this and that. But I wanted to mark it in some way, and while also allowing for the fact that we're going to be talking a lot about the week that was. So I came up with a way, and this was again going through the old folder of stuff that I found during the week while prepping for this show, and I was like, that's how we do it. Because guys, Keenan and Katie, even this is before your time, because back in the day, Low Blows was very different. Now it's just we tape it, and like as anyone who goes to the Zoom every week knows, it's pretty much like what you hear in the podcast is what you hear, is how we tape it. We tape it as live. Whereas beforehand, we used to tape it in segments, and to break up the segments, we used to have, because my old co-host, Don Marnell, is obviously, everyone who knows him knows he's an amazing impersonator. So what we used to have was him do impressions of wrestlers, but we'd improvise these completely. I'd literally play music in my room, and then he'd have to improvise the wrestler straight away. And we mightn't get it all first take. We might like workshop the ideas and stuff, but generally they were improvised. So we're gonna play some of them tonight as like a tribute to Don, like who was a the OG on this show and obviously very popular. We're gonna take it. I want you to hear his voice throughout this as well, because he was incremental to Low Blows getting off the ground and being successful. So we're going to play some clips between, and I'll give you a sample of kind of what we did. So this is like a thing we did for the Macho Man. This is kind of gives you an idea of it.
This is the Macho Man, Randy Savage. Oh yeah, coming to you from beyond the grave. And you're listening to Low Blows with Rick Nash and Don Marnell. Oh yeah.
So you get the idea. And like, you guys, like anyone listening who's heard these knows what the story is. And Keen and Katie, you can probably imagine where it went from here, because like, of course, we ended up just having a laugh and then taking the piss. Like after we do some normal ones and then we're like, all right, yeah, but we got to riff the piss. So then stuff like this ended up happening.
That was the great Cali. I think he was saying you're listening to Low Blows with Rick Nash and Don Marnell.
Rather.
All right, so
that's actually a really solid Cali as well. Like, you know what I mean? Very,
I don't know if this is a good time to bring up, but we can't hear these.
No!
I can.
What?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, I think it's just all you.
Fuck. You just see Katie's dejected.
Oh, okay. All right. I guess.
Sorry, Katie. They're really good, though. Apologies. It's when you shared your video, everything just went to shit. And then sometimes we do stuff where, like, it's we come up with an idea and we're like, I actually don't know how this person sounds. So we do stuff like this.
Hi, this is Mikey from the Spirit Squad. And you're listening to Low Blowers with Rick Nash and Don Marnell. What? You don't know that I don't sound like this?
So we're going to be playing them throughout the show and just as a little tribute as we kind of go along. So that's pretty much what's coming up. We're going to be talking WrestleMania. We're going to be talking the big news of the week and everything that we usually talk about with some throwbacks along the way. Anyway, guys, are you ready to get this show in a row?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Katie's just resentful. She can't hear half the things. Yeah, fine. Whatever. It's Low Blows 300. Can we get a bit of energy? Are you ready to get this show in a row?
The funniest part was that it was actually a Katie Harvey impression. I couldn't even hear it.
Are you ready to start the show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Right, let's just get the shoulder on. It's Low Blows 300.
Hi, this is forgotten WWE superstar Maven, and I'm just looking for a job. So if anybody out there wants to hire a former pro wrestler or entertainer, I'd really like that. Anyway, bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for us to discuss the big news stories of the week, as we always do, because, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to get this show on the road with...
Queen versus King.
Queen versus Keen, because ladies and gentlemen, my two co-hosts are good friends, but they're even better enemies. And the way we discuss the wrestling news stories of the week is we pick the top five biggest stories, we put 30 seconds on the clock, and we get points for punditry. They've been competing against each other at the best of five every week, and then the winner of the week gets a score. It is gets not 20 quid, like Jesus Christ, we're a small podcast, we'd go bankrupt in seconds, but they get a score for the week on the weekly scoreboard, which so far is drawn at 6-6. So finally poised. Keen, you are going first this week because Katie, you went first last week. We will get this show on the road. Guys, in the chat as well, make sure to get in your votes if you haven't joined us already. First story, WWE launched their newest video game, WWE 2K22, during WrestleMania with the tagline, "It hits differently." But what different ways would you like to be hit by the new WWE game, Keen?
Ideally, like, nowhere. But I mean, if this is like one of those things where you had to be hit differently by a game, I'd say probably the center of the forehead, because that's like when you hit a football. I feel like in other place, like if you got hit in the eye, or if you got hit, like, you know, across the hand or something, it'd really hurt. Top of the head would probably hurt as well. But I mean, dead center of the forehead, I think, you know, you've got a good bit of sort of, I don't know what the word is, you know, to sort of combat the pain of being hit. So I'd go with the middle of the forehead.
Solid, solid show. Katie, which different ways would you like to be hit by the new WWE game?
I would like my interest to be hit by the WWE game because I don't think they cater to people like me. It should be more like a Facebook or a Sky game. It should be like Beehive Bedlam with John Cena throwing a steel step, or like Criminal Case where the mystery is like, who is the mystery GM all along? I just think that would appeal to my demographic of game player.
Okay, solid. I always pop for Katie talking about how she's a Facebook gamer. So point to Katie for that one.
I really, really, really hope that when they announce like the details of 2K22, it's a fucking like Candy Crush or some shit. And everybody's like, what the fuck is this? And Katie's like, yes!
Katie would like you to play WWE 2K22. Katie would like you to play WWE 2K22. Point to Katie, you're leading 1-0. Question two. Well done to NXT, who beat AEW in the ratings last night and the last night of the Wednesday Night Wars. We hear a lot about how important the demo is, but how important is next goal wins logic in winning a war? And can NXT claim to have won the war as a result of this? Katie.
Claiming to have won is not winning, okay? It's not supported by the fact of history. Like, Vince claimed that Brett beat Beth, but, like, history has shown us that that's not true. Keane claims that me and him are not friends or equal tag partners. But, again, history does not support these facts because we are the longest-reigning tag champions and the longest-reigning tag team podcast hosts on Low Blows, as I recently found out. So, again, history does not support the facts. So you cannot just, like, claim things and then say they're true. So, no, they cannot claim to have won this war.
Interesting strategy, trying to befriend someone by forcing them through your podcast. We'll see how that works out for you. Keen, your thoughts?
Look, I understand, you know, they say Triple H said he got bullied off the network. And yes, that's fair. And the ratings, they got destroyed in the ratings, whatever. But like, if you look back at history, you look back at all the wars, next goal winner plays a big role. You look at the ceasefire in World War One, where they started playing football at Christmas. The reason that put a halt to proceedings is because next goal winner, they're like, oh shit, you know what I mean? Like the French got it. They had like the 1914 Mbappe ready to go. And that was it. That's why there was a pause in the war. And, you know, next goal winner has a lot of legitimacy to it.
I'm going to put Katie trying to use the question to force Keaton to admit that he's her friend. I really like the moxie. I like, you're putting yourself out there. You're making yourself vulnerable. So point to Katie. You're leading 2-0 so far. Absolutely romping it, but there's still three to go. And we've seen comebacks plenty of times before in Queen versus Keen. Question three, CM Punk refused to rule out a return to wrestling in an interview with Uproxx this week, saying AEW would interest him creatively, but the bigger money match would be against Triple H and WWE, though he did say he felt it wasn't his world anymore. Do you think there'd be a place in wrestling for CM Punk if he did decide to come back, though, Keen?
Fucking easily. CM Punk's deadly. He just doesn't have a clear idea of like, I disagree that CM Punk versus Triple H is the money match. I don't think any Triple H match is a money match at this stage. CM Punk versus Roman Reigns would be deadly. CM Punk and AEW would be deadly. If you are at one point like one of the best in the world, then for the rest of your career, you're at the very least going to be good, if not great. I love CM Punk. I think he always has loads to offer, and the pop when he returns is going to be massive.
Okay, painting pictures always butters me up well. Katie, what have you got?
There is absolutely no place for CM Punk in wrestling anymore. The CM Punk bandwagon has not only driven by, it's fallen off the tracks, it's been split into a million pieces, it's been chopped up for firewood, it's been burnt, and then the ashes scooped up and like scattered off a cliff, because there's no dream matches for me with CM Punk anymore. He does not interest me in the slightest, and I don't think a return would get a pop because the shock factor is gone after he's already worked on a WWE show.
Hey, Harry shoots on CM Punk.
I do admire the fact that you just went for it there. It was interesting. It was an interesting strategy. But Corbin Keane actively made me get excited about the prospect. Katie depressed me. So point to Keane. You don't win points for depressing the judge.
I just shoot fast, okay?
Question four. WWE announced last week that they would auction off Undertaker NFTs last weekend. I tried to look into what these words meant, but I couldn't make head nor tail of it. So I'll give one of you a point right now for the best explanation as to what an NFT actually is and why someone would want this, Katie.
Well, thank you for checking in with your resident technology expert here on Low Blows. I reckon that NFT stands for neat funky thing, because I've looked at these and they're just basically like really cool gifts, and like in the words of Marge Simpson, I just think they're neat. I think they're good to collect, and I think people have a lovely time bidding on them.
Neat funky thing, there you go, the Katie Harvey story. Corporate Keen, you seem like you might have more of a clue than either of us as what an NFT is.
Right, NFT stands for no fucking tires. Do you ever order like an Undertaker t-shirt or an Undertaker DVD? It shows up at your house, comes out of the van. There's these massive tires that come with it, and you have to bring them into your hall, into your sitting room. And then if you don't get rid of them in time, the tires just stack up on top of each other, and then you've got a room full of tires that's just full of tire and nothing else. This is no fucking tires whatsoever. Very convenient, well worth the money.
I'm still completely none the wiser. However, Corporate Keen made me laugh slightly more, though. Neat funky thing was close. I'm going to give point to Keen, which sends it to a deadlock. Question five. WWE are to present the documentary on Vladimir, a super fan who found his love for pro wrestling after moving to Manhattan from Haiti. But what super fan would you like to see get the WWE documentary's treatment, Keen?
I don't know any super fans off the top of my head in WWE. The Brock Lesnar guy, I know a lot of people don't like him, but I'd love to know why how he manages to travel around the world and follow WWE everywhere. You know what I mean? Like when Raw's in different venues in different cities and states and all that, he's always there. So I'd like to know why and how.
Okay, Katie, I feel like this is an open goal for you.
So, you know, this super fan should kind of emulate someone who adores WWE, who, you know, spends all their time on social media talking about how they're the greatest company in the world and that, you know, everyone else should want to work for them and want to watch it, how they're incomparable to everyone else. Someone who just really, like, puts in the shift to promote and adore the company. And I just think that docuseries on Seth Rollins as the WWE super fan is the way to go. I mean, you just need to look at his Twitter log to just see his dedication to pushing the product. So he's absolutely the next choice.
Point and the week to Katie. Well done. Absolutely fantastic stuff. Other answers I would have accepted was me and Mertz, the Jimmy Malloy story. I just like where Jimmy just takes us through his vast collection of wrestling merchandise. I'd be all about that. But fantastically played, Katie. Well done. And you are the winner. You're leading 7-6 now. So congratulations.
I hear voices in my head. They counsel me. They understand. They talk to me.
This is WWE superstar Randy Orton. You're listening to
Low Blows, Randy. Low Blows.
Low Blows with
Rick Nash.
Listen, I got this.
Okay.
You're listening to Low Blows with John Cash. Rick Nash.
Yep.
And
Don
Marnell. Yes. I had it the whole time.
Okay.
Stay tuned.
Big week in the ring for professional wrestling. It's time for us to talk about the good and the bad, as we always do, starting with the bad, because, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for...
Say something stupid.
Say something stupid. Worst moments of the week. In at number five, I want to talk about something very serious about NXT, because as everyone knows, like with Low Blows, we're known for doing like wrestling DJ sets. We had a wrestling band. Wrestling theme songs are important to us. And NXT ruining or changing or getting rid of altogether iconic theme songs is frankly unforgivable. It started this week at and WWE as a whole are guilty of this, by the way, because there were a few incidences of this. It started last week at TakeOver, where it was Adam Cole against Kyle O'Reilly, and they both came out to like crappy now some people liked them, so again, I don't want to like control the narrative here and say they were unequivocally terrible. If you enjoyed them, more power to you, but for me, they were less than versions of the Undisputed Era team, both different remixes. There is a simple way, like when you have an iconic theme song like that, there's a simple way to do it when two people who use the theme song are now feuding with each other. What you do is you have the theme song play, and then the first guy comes out, and then the theme song continues to play, and the second guy comes out after him and does a separate entrance to the same song. And the winner of that match gets to keep the theme song, because there's no reason to get rid of Shock the System. system. I know it's associated with Undisputed Era, but still, it's also a banger. And to give two guys two shit team songs, well, there's one right there on the table for with no need for it to go. Adam Cole should have kept it because you've got the boom part of it, whereas Kyle O'Reilly could get by and just change his gimmick and be grungy. That's the way he's looking to go anyway. But for me, this was unforgivable. And then they did it with a couple other songs, like Jerry Lawler's song, for example. Now, I'm not going to, you know, you're not going to hear much of me defending Jerry Lawler on the show, but at the same time, they own that song. They've got it banked. It's in their library now. They paid for it. It's just now gathering dust. And it's a memorable theme song that we all recognize. They've changed it to this Casio keyboard version. Do you ever, like, do you guys ever own a keyboard or play with a keyboard?
Yeah.
No.
Do you know the way when you can play like sample versions of the song? Do you know what I mean? And it's like, and it's just like, and it's not near like the song, you know. You know what I mean? If it was like Linda McMahon's theme, the Low Blows song, it'd be like, it's just like a crappy Casio mix. That's what they do with Jerry Lawler's theme. It's literally the same song that they already own, except play it on a Casio keyboard for some reason. And here's the worst part though, okay? Because there is zero excuse for this, because this song, they didn't have to write, they didn't have to pay for it. It's literally opened in the public domain, and that's how they could use it. They've changed Walter and Imperium's theme song. There's no need for it whatsoever. And here's the thing, they did the same thing as they did with Lawler, where it's the exact same, except just the Casio keyboard version. So it's like, and it's like, now I just see these as like, like corporate Keane in a video playing the fucking recorder. That's what I'm thinking when these guys are like doing a beatdown on NXT on Tuesday. It's insanity. There's no need for it. They own these songs. And for some reason, yeah, the Walter one just makes me think that they just need to have it done their own way, because that's free. We could play this song, we could play that song on this show if we wanted, and we wouldn't get done for copyright. It's past the statute of limitations. Unforgivable. Only the sixth worst thing of the week.
Sorry, King. To go back to what you're saying about the Undisputed Era theme, I think. Well, personally, I don't support the idea of like someone keeping a faction song, because remember when like Roman Reigns kept the Shield one, and it wasn't really as special then when you heard it again. But one thing I will say, I like your idea about two wrestlers coming out to the same song, but I tweak a little bit. They come out at the exact same time, same entrance, not one entrance after another. So one, they have to like share the stage and share the ramp. They're not allowed to fight yet. They have to be civil because they want to make their own entrance too. So they have to be like, come on, fuck off, you know? Yeah, that's what I want to see.
Making fun of each other's heads. Yes. Okay, I'd be big into that. Yeah, no. But again, they're just bangers, and don't just make me have to Spotify them. I don't want to give up that moment. I never agreed to any of this.
But then when you hear it again, you'll be like, oh, you know, like years down the line, to be like, oh.
Yeah, fair. That's true. I will pop. But we'll probably never hear Lawler's or Walter's again. Walter is unforgivable.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
It's crazy. Especially just as he's kind of taken off, and we'll discuss some more as the show goes along. In at number 5, talk to me about the bad from NXT UK.
NXT UK had a really good show this week, so like my gripe is minor, and it's more a production thing that just irritates me. But look, I'm gonna caveat this by saying I understand that there's a global pandemic going on. Okay, like I understand that fact, and that not everybody can be in London to film. And obviously, A-Kid is probably in Spain or wherever he's living at the moment. He had two promos on NXT UK that were just like him on a camera phone in front of a blank wall. And again, I know people are just doing the best at what they have, but like when this is your WrestleMania takeover production, like your big show, and like all the other promos are done in the performance center with professional looking cameras, it's not great. You know what I mean? It's just like maybe you could have just lived without those Jax promos. You know what I mean? Or like, give a little bit more guidance, like in front of a nice, like I'm in front of a lovely orange wall today to give some interest on the Zoom if you're here.
It is, you know? It's a statement wall. I'm a fan of the statement wall.
I'm thinking about the viewers here, you know.
A nice little treat, little accoutrement for your viewing experience.
I'm just laughing at the fucking doc. It just says, I know we're in a pandemic, but don't film promos in the Jacks.
Like, I don't want to be overly harsh, as I said, because I know we're in a pandemic. But it's just like, it was kind of jarring next to everything else that was like professionally filmed, you know. And it's not WWE standard. And look, no issues with the content of the promos or anything like that. It's just the actual production value of sticking that in the middle.
But like, you just made a good point. Like, it is WWE at the end of the day. You know what I mean? If it was an indie wrestler, I'd be like, ah, come on, Katie. but they have, like, surely they can, like, send, you know, if they need to send over something or, like, I don't know, like, sort something out, like, I don't know.
Yeah, but or like, if it's not Nia Jax, like, that'd be deep. That'd be like, ah, oh, I see what you did there, Nia Jax, hey! But, like, no, that's not okay. Because the name is Jax, Katie. You look confused.
I got it.
I did not get that at all. I'm so sorry. It just went way up. Like, my head's down here. And the jaw is way up there.
I went into a thought bubble of Nia Jax cutting a promo in the Jax that somehow involved the phrase, my hole, and I just shuddered internally. I was just like, no, don't put that out into the universe.
She'll do it. She'll fucking do it. Yeah, no, I agree. Jimmy says your statement wall looks like the Big Sean wall, which is a nice throwback. There you go. I have to get a green screen. Jane, when you made me jealous with his green screen on WrestleMania Sunday, so I have to get a green screen, and the first thing I'll get is the Big Sean wall. I will travel to the Big Sean, like, and take a picture of the wall just to have it as my green screen.
Do what Jerry did and just, like, invest in the visual side of things for the audio medium.
10,000 euro has gone into what you hear today. Unfortunately, all on audio and video features. Joe says all promos should be filmed in the Jack. So look, it's, you know, differing opinions, you know. Joe exclusively wants promos in the toilet.
Again, but look, if they all matched and they were all filmed in a Jack, I probably wouldn't have a problem. It's the jarring, like, jump of quality I have an issue with.
It's the inconsistency. Either go all in or all out. Like, so yeah, no, I agree. That's a solid point. Solid point. Everything sounds like something to do with the toilet when we're saying it. So let's move on to number four. Quickly from AEW, QT Marshall is starting a new stable. Don't get too excited, guys. Don't get too enthusiastic. Like, what? Tell me more, Rick. Yeah, no, that's how I felt too. Here's the thing. AEW is a bit jobs for the boys at times. Like, don't get me wrong, they have a lot of great positives as well, and we're going to discuss some positives from it. But QT Marshall is very much like one of the boys. And at least when Hulk Hogan used to bring in his mates and like have Brutus Beefcake in every promotion with him, or the Nasty Boys or something, they weren't made like a center focal point where we were asked to take them seriously for long extended periods of time and like be a central figure on the show. But QT Marshall is now starting a stable and it looks to be feuding with Cody. And like, nothing against the guy. I'm sure he's a perfectly fine wrestler, but like, he's not someone that people are clamoring for. He's very much, and his gimmick is that you guys think I'm all here because I'm just friends with Cody. Well, now I've turned on Cody, and it's like, yeah, but we also know wrestling, like, again, there's a scripted nature to it, and this is actually a favor that like Cody did for you by giving you your own stable. And like, again, he's fine in a certain role. Like, I don't even mind. It makes sense for people who are booking to bring in their friends, like, because they're the people they trust in positions and whatnot. And to be fair, AEW have been good in kind of the quality control. You know what I mean? They don't bring in all of their old mates. Zack Ryder, for example, got brought back. And I've no problem with Zack Ryder. But again, he's not someone that in 2021 we necessarily want to see main event pay-per-views. That's more, he's more on Impact's level and so on. So they brought him in for a brief cameo, and then he didn't give him a contract and just went on, and no one was calling for it, and everyone was fine with that situation. QT Marshall is just, he's someone that should be on Dark. He's someone that's the experienced guy you put with someone that you're looking to shine up. That's where he is in wrestling, and I'm not convinced by the first promo that he cut with his new stable. He's got a really monotonous promo delivery. He's trying to do zingers as well. Like, he's trying to be like Cody Rhodes, more like Cody sidewalks. He didn't say that. I don't want to attribute that bad joke to QT Marshall. But he doesn't know how to deliver a zinger. He doesn't know how to change his tone at any stage to actually make someone laugh or for it to land. And then there's little shitty, like, kind of, again, just referring to WWE where they don't need to. Aaron Solo, who like, again, if you recognize the name, you may remember was the person that was dating Bailey at one stage. I think they were engaged or something like that. And like the thing that they said was, now I'd forgotten about that. But then QT Marshall's like, this is Aaron Solo and he's not going to be known as someone's boyfriend. I'm like, wouldn't have known until you said it. They had no idea that was him until you said it. Now I'm like, Bailey's boyfriend. And every time I see him, because they've said, don't think of him as Bailey's boyfriend, I'm like, Bailey's boyfriend, Bailey's boyfriend, Bailey. You know what I mean? And it's just like, I wouldn't have even copped it, but now you've drawn attention to it. And also as well, like, it's just, who cares about QT Marshall? Who was asking for this? No one was. No one was calling for it. It's not good. This isn't going to be a success. This is going to be like, they're going to be the shield of AEW Dark Elevation, that third level show. That's what they're going to be. That's where this is going to land. So just let's fast forward there. This is a Ryback style situation where we know they're going to get to that stage. So let's just get there and let's just not waste any time on Dynamite on this. It's so bad and it's going to be bad and it's not going to get better.
I'm into it.
Yeah, fair enough. Like, fair enough. Whatever you're into. You like that, though. You like the kind of the undercard. You, like, watch main event.
Because before this, I was like, yeah, QT Marshall, like, he's just another name. I don't care. But because, like, he's doing something, I'm like, all right. So now, like, now I get to find out who he is. It's like a new character is being unlocked. Yeah. You know what I mean? But we'll see where it goes, though. I won't die on the hill.
we'll again, I may turn around. A few weeks ago, I talked about Cameron Grimes, and then a couple of weeks later, I'm like, I actually kind of like Cameron Grimes now. So I'll admit, if I'm wrong here, I just don't see myself going back on this. But look, I'll give it a chance. Fair enough. In at number three, let's talk about the bad from WrestleMania.
Yeah. I loved WrestleMania. Well, obviously, we'll get to that like in a few minutes. Can't wait to talk about it, right? But there was just two things that I wasn't really big into. One from each night. The first one, the match itself wasn't that bad. But the one thing I didn't like from night one was about Shane McMahon against Braun Strowman. So my issue with it was, right, I watched SmackDown before WrestleMania, yeah? And I saw, like, all the different, like, all some of the talent that I had in that fucking Battle Royal. Like, you've got, like, Ricochet, Mustafa Ali, Buddy Murphy, Angel Garza. You've got, like, even not in the Battle Royal, you've Aleister Black. You've got fucking Peyton Royce, Charlotte, Bayley, you know, all these people that don't have matches at WrestleMania. And Shane McMahon has a match at WrestleMania, you know what I mean? And it's like, I always, like, when the build-up to a match is bad, as I will, like, obviously I might have a laugh at it or whatever, but I'll still give the match a chance and be like, right, well, maybe, you know, the match will be worth it. And I watched the match anyway, Shane against Braun, and it was all right. It was grand, but, like, nothing happened in that match that none of those people I just mentioned could have done. You know what I mean? Like, Shane, like, the big spot, like, we're all waiting for a big Shane McMahon spot, and it was just a flip off the cage that you see in every other cage match. I know, I mean, sometimes it's a moonsault, sometimes it's a splash, you know, sometimes they land their opponent, sometimes they don't, but it was, you know, and I know, don't get me wrong, I'm glad he didn't do anything crazy to kill himself for, like, you know, something that wasn't really, I don't think that would have been worth it, you know what I mean? Like, but I just think, like, and could you imagine, right? Imagine, like, for example, Mustafa Ali, right? Doesn't do the whole retribution stuff. He doesn't go heel. He's a babyface Mustafa Ali, yeah? And he goes up against Braun Strowman in a steel fucking heel Strowman in a steel cage. And he has to, like, take him out. You know what I mean? And it's like, think about, like, or Bayley. I know, like, we think, oh, it's WWE. They'll never do intergender. But that's because, like, I mean, there's nothing stopping them, though. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many potential matches you could have done there that would have been way, way better. And, like, when you look at the segments that have been done, like, beforehand, you know, we talk about, like, you know, like, all the, what was it, you know, like, the promos and stuff where he's being like, you're dumb, I'm smart, and all that sort of stuff, yeah? And, like, again, I was saying, like, well, maybe the match will be worth it. That's the whole plot twist, right? It's shit segment after shit segment, but at least the match will be so good that I'm like, I don't care how bad it was in lead up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it just wasn't worth the payoff, I felt, you know what I mean?
I agree.
Katie, do you have any strong opinions on the Shane McMahon match?
We covered this from start to finish every week and say something stupid, so.
I'm kind of very neutral on the match, you know what I mean? Like, it, okay, here's where I am. exactly how you feel about Shane McMahon and Braun Strowman, is how I felt about the tag team turmoil match that came before Shane McMahon and Braun Strowman. I was disappointed that the likes of Charlotte and Bayley and all were left off the card and that tag match was on it, when I don't think there was strong storyline, strong build, and I don't think they should have had a match on both nights of WrestleMania, considering the amount of talent that weren't on WrestleMania. So I think I was so disappointed by the tag turmoil match that Shane and Braun was like elevated in my eyes. You know, yeah,
that's actually a good show. Yeah, the comparison made it look a lot better. And how shit the storyline had been. Like, you're kind of like, this is the best part about that feud, but I'm still not sure that it's good. So you're kind of like,
And like, at least they had the right result, you know what I mean? Shane lost and he's off TV now, and Braun looks like a monster again. So at least, like, even if the match wasn't fantastic, I'm happy with the outcome. Like, again, I'm not happy with the outcome of the tag team turmoil, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, okay, yes, they put Tamina and Natalya over to then get destroyed on night two. And again, I just don't understand the logic of anything that happened with the women's tag titles for the last 3 months, and that includes over the whole of WrestleMania. So should have been Queen's Court. What a fucking throwback. So Shane and Braun didn't upset me that much. Like, my disappointment was with the tag turmoil more than anything.
Well, speaking of not living up to the hype, I said last week, was no matter what happens with The Fiend and Randy Orton, I'm looking forward to it, because if it's really good, then great. If it's really shit, then great. But it won't be like a neutral, like, boring regular match, you know what I mean? Like, something of note will happen. And they had a fucking regular match with a red light on.
I told you.
It ended via RKO. Oh man, they burned him alive at the start and worked backwards. Like, oh my god, I can't believe that's how they ended it. Like, I genuinely was like, again, it's like WrestleMania 32 all over again, where everybody's like, this is going to be shit. And I'm like, no, it won't, guys, come on. I look like such a fucking idiot. Because, like, I was literally there was loads to look forward to night two, but this is like the match I was really, just from a curiosity standpoint, this is the match I was really looking forward to, you know what I mean? And like, Alexa Bliss come out in a box-like structure, and like, like, that's the big whoa. You know what I mean? I was like, what was the plan? Like, what did you feel about it?
Kid, you ruined this match for me, right? And I'm gonna tell you why. Like, I have been invested in this storyline since the beginning, good and bad. I was like ride or die with this storyline. I was but what you do, and this is what you do for a lot of pay-per-views I've discovered, is you hype me up to unbelievable levels. I was chatting like with my with the girls about this match, about like what was good, what we loved, whatever, and like, I had been hyping up The Fiend and Randy Orton to them. And then I was trying to explain to them why I was so disappointed. And because like, they were like, you're really taking this match very hard. And I was like, no, you don't understand, right? When I was talking to Kian during the week about this match, he convinced me that The Fiend was going to have his head punt kicked clear off his shoulders.
You specifically said that, Kian.
And I stand by it. Because that's what do you do after you like burn someone alive?
That was when my expectations were at for this match. So when it ended in a fucking RKO, I was just like, throw my hands in the air, I'm going to bed. That's amazing. So thank you, Kian, for just ruining yet another match on the pay-per-view.
Go ahead. Why didn't they put this on SmackDown and then put the Battle Royal on night two? If that's the way they're gonna be, you know what I mean? Like, what? I'm trying to think. Oh, I don't know. My brain is empty.
I feel like you guys may need to open now. I love Kian's boundless enthusiasm, and I don't feel like you should apologize or feel embarrassed or bad for being hopeful. That's a good quality, and don't lose that. But also, I feel like it'd be a good idea to open yourselves up to the possibility that when you're like, nothing, like only something amazing can happen in WWE in this storyline, that you're like, yeah, they can also just go really shit. They can also just go the other way as well.
But look, it's not just Keane that does it to me. Like, Phil literally just stuck his head in the door and goes, tell them about my fantasy booking idea, but don't take credit for it. Right? So this is where he wants the storyline to go now, because obviously Alexa Bliss is some kind of Sister Abigail creature, right? And he's saying the way it should have went was, obviously WrestleMania is her taking back the Fiend from Bray Wyatt. So he wanted the lights to turn back on and have Husky Harris standing in the middle of the ring. You know what I mean? Like, just absolutely stripped him away to his core. And he's just Husky Harris now. That's him. That's who he is on Raw now. And then Alexa Bliss gives the Fiend to another wrestler. So she's the one who gives and takes the power away. I can't remember who he suggested should get it next. So Big E.
Oh, man, that's like, deadly. That's so much better. Like, what we're going to end up getting is just more spooky segments between, like, the Fiend, like, Bray Wyatt and Alexa Bliss. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's yeah. so different. That's a laugh, like.
I don't know about Big E, because, yeah. like, I don't know, because here's the thing. What Big E's doing now is really good. And, like, yeah, we're also talking about how disappointed we are and how the storyline went. So, like, all that'll happen is 6 months from now, like, it might be good for a little bit, like the Fiend, but then 6 months from now, we're like, I can't believe they did Big E like that.
You can rehab wrestlers because you can make them the Fiend and then take it away.
Do it. Yeah. Make Roman Reigns. No, Roman Reigns. Just go straight to the top. Right. Everything's going really well right now. Fiend.
Just come back. Just gets ruined. He's just really unhappy, like, playing it. And he's just like, fuck's sake.
Could you imagine the Royal Rumble 2020? It's like, on this day, and we're like, way! And then, like, the lights just go off, and he comes out with the fucking red lights and the smoke and the mask. It's like, I don't care. It's like, yeah, it's your first appearance back after, like, a decade. It's like, I'm the Fiend now. It's like, right.
Amazing. Let's keep on a similar topic. Let's talk about Raw.
Yeah, because my bad from Raw is also centered around the Fiend. And look, here's the thing, right? We had an Alexis Playground and we had a Firefly Funhouse. And I actually didn't hate either promo. What got me so angry and riled up is the fact that I enjoyed both promos, which means they're sucking me into this again. Because the build and the promos can be really good, but it never, ever pays off with the Fiend. And it's just an absolute source of frustration now. Like, I was talking to a lady the other day and he pointed out to me, the Fiend has never won a feud. He's never come out the better of any feud. Like, and we get ourselves worked up. We're like, oh, we're going to get the Demon versus the Fiend. We're going to get, like, all these things, and they never materialize. And it's just, those two promos were such an example of, like, them starting to build my hopes up again. Like, and it's just going to crash down. But, like, there's also no need for these promos because this storyline doesn't need to happen. Like, Randy Orton cut a promo as saying, like, Alexa Bliss is done, you know, the Fiend is done, like, they're gone forever. But, like, this was then preceded by an Alexa promo and a Fiend promo. And it's just like, no, Randy, you've just decided to ignore the situation. And that's very different from Alexa and the Fiend being done with this character. You've literally just said, enough of this bullshit, and walked away into the main event. Like, that is not the same as, like, this storyline being finished.
Yeah.
So it was just a bit frustrating to see it, like, just carry on. You know what I mean? Like,
I had an almost identical reaction to what you're describing there, because to me, I liked, do you remember we were talking about, like, Alexa and Orton when they were fighting each other, and Keane getting us hyped up for something we'd ultimately be disappointed by, where Keane was like, what if they wrestled? Like, why couldn't Alexa just wrestle? And then Alexa starts cutting that promo where she's like, I didn't need you. What if I realized that I could do everything by myself? And I'm like, Alexa's going to be she's the Fiend now, and she's, like, going to be an unbeatable wrestler. And I've had an idea for that for years, where it's like, just create, like, a Michonne or Kill Bill the Bride type figure, where she's just unbeatable. And, like, you know, in WWE, again, they stop short. Like, Ronda Rousey is the closest they'll get, where it's like a woman who can bash lads as well. So fair enough if they have to go about giving her superpowers to do so. I'm like, we could get some cool intergender stuff out of this and it'll at least be different. But then I'm like you, in that I've been burned too many times before now that I'm like, I can't even get into it. I can't even get excited about it. Like, in theory, am I happy to see Bray Wyatt back? Kind of. I like the Firefly Funhouse skits. I think they're always very interesting. But yeah, it's a lot of build for something that's ultimately going to disappoint. So it's tough, because it's actually, like, we're almost
we're almost shitting on it for getting us excited.
It's yeah. crazy though. Like this time last year, he actually it was the one feud that he did win when he beat John Cena. And after that, we were all like, "Oh, let's see where this goes." And now a year later, it's like, "Ooh."
didn't he have like a week long title reign? Wasn't that momentum killed by a week long title reign?
Yeah, Goldberg beat him. Yeah.
It's like they'll push him so far and then just like not give it a chance. I don't know, it is just a frustrating thing, like, and and I've mentioned now, like, Randy Orton has just like put himself in the main event, which is fine. I really like Randy Orton, but like the other thing I wanted to talk about from Raw is like this whole Bobby Lashley Hurt Business situation, where so they have a triple threat anyway: Drew McIntyre, Randy Orton, and Braun Strowman, who are all saying they have a claim, they want to face someone next, whatever. I don't really know why Drew McIntyre is there. He doesn't really have a claim for a title shot because he got bet, like, but he ended up winning the match. And then MVP brings out, is it T-Bar and Slapjack from Retribution? And they beat up Drew McIntyre. Oh, Mace. And they beat up Drew McIntyre. And it kind of looks like they've joined the Hurt Business. You know what I mean? Mm. But they're definitely doing it under instruction from MVP. And my issue with this was, did the Hurt Business not get over and get popular by constantly being in Retribution?
Yeah.
So it's like, why are they the people who are, like, you've kicked out Benjamin and Alexander because they're not getting the job done, but you've just replaced them with the people that they were beating consistently. And I don't really understand why they're your go-to guys for taking out a champion. I hate the whole Hurt Business breakup anyway. So this is just something that's really, really bothered me.
100%. No, I agree with that. And I don't think many would disagree. Keen, you're a resident Hurt Business expert, correspondence, if you will. What are your own thoughts on this potential new look Hurt Business?
MVP, I think, you know, he's a very smart man, but I don't think he's thinking with his head. I think it was an impulse decision. You know, he's thinking short term, like obviously T-Bar and Mace. Notice it wasn't Slapjack or Reckoning. That's a decision because T-Bar and Mace are massive. Drew McIntyre is massive. So they need, you know, size and power that Shelton Benjamin and Cedric don't have to take out the champion. But I still think, you know, kicking out Shelton and Cedric's a bad, bad move. Long term, it's MVP. He's a smart man. He's always scouting, you know what I mean? He's always got plans. I don't think T-Bar and Mace are in the Hurt Business. I think this is just, you know, he's a businessman. He'll do business with anyone if it's beneficial to himself and the Almighty, you know what I mean? So I think I'm hoping that they're not members, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, I think we all do, but...
Well, I don't know why. I think, like, I find Mace, like, I think it's because, like, we know, like, T-Bar as Donovan Dijak, so, like, whereas Mace didn't really have anything as a wrestler before this, so I find Mace weirdly, like, cooler than T-Bar, even though it's the same thing. Yeah. Like, I think it's because, like, yeah, just because it's, like, we know him as Donovan Dijak, so it's like somebody playing dress-up, whereas Mace, I find, like, it's such a stupid thing to say, but I find him a little bit more, like, convincing and more, like, he's more into it, but I don't know.
I'd have liked to see Dominic Dijak, and it's like, this is a rebrand. He's now going away from the Retribution stuff, but like, I don't get what their character motivation is. Like, if they're not, like, if we know who these people are, if we know that that's Dominic Dijak and that's Mia Yim, to the point that they were pretty much saying it on commentary, like, during Retribution, then what? And but they're not Retribution anymore. Why are they still acting like Retribution? It just, none of it makes sense. It's very frustrating, and to have lost something good to get that, and now it's looking like Shelton and Cedric are just, they're getting jobber entrances and they're jobbing out to the Viking Raiders coming back, which is really depressing. Like, yeah, it is. It's depressing, and there's no need after all the good work they put in. We've got a lot of activity in the chat. Jimmy says the Phil Boyd tribute team got two nights. That's Natalya and Tamina, of course. We have Joe saying Tamina cutting a promo on Raw Talk like Stevie from Malcolm in the Middle made the tag team turmoil. Mitchell says it's a bit weird that Wyatt can take the 4 or 5 curb stomps, but an RKO is his kryptonite. See, it's because it can happen from out of nowhere. He knew to expect the curb stomps or something. I don't know. But yeah, no, a lot of good points raised there. And speaking of people raising points, that's kind of what I want to bring up as the most stupid thing of the week, because with WrestleMania, everyone gets back into wrestling again, and kind of everyone kind of has opinions on things and stuff like that. And that's a brilliant thing. I love like being on Twitter, like when it's either the Royal Rumble match or WrestleMania, because everyone's on there, everyone's saying their thoughts. Like people you haven't spoken to in years are like, here's what I think about, like they'll text you that night and they're like, here's what I think about wrestling. And it's like, I didn't even know you watched. And you can have conversations and stuff like that. The problem is that with that, they're like come like they're the people who kind of use wrestling for their business. So the news websites and the columnists and the opinion guys, the so-called influencers of the wrestling community see this as their opportunity to gain business. So they have to come out with their spicy hot takes. And as a result, what you normally get at WrestleMania are some of the worst takes ever, because you have people that are actively trying. And I'm going to call out names and I'm going to call out takes here, because some of them are awful. And I want to get you guys involved as well, just pointing out the blatant holes in this, just because they're so transparent and see-through. Don't worry, this won't be much of a puzzle or a mystery. But just to get started, okay? So, for example, we had, like we spoke last week about Dave Meltzer, and I won't get too into it because we've already covered it. Dave Meltzer describing Bad Bunny as ethnically famous. At one stage, like, and that's how he described him, because his son and his friends had never listened to him, which is just fantastic journalism across the board by the absolute goat of wrestling journalism. I wonder if he heard those, like, what was the reaction? What did you think? And we'll talk about the match, but what did you think about the reaction for Bad Bunny? Did you hear that crowd and think he wasn't famous? How did you gauge that reaction when he came out?
Oh, he's a superstar.
That crowd's dead.
he got a huge reaction. That was not, and that wasn't ethnic cheers, Dave. That was wrestling fans. That was a bunch of the wrestling fans. Yeah, there's a lot of, it is a diverse fan base and stuff like that, but let's call a spade a spade. A lot of wrestling fan base is like, you know, average normal white guy, you know what I mean? That is a lot of white male, you know, a lot of the fan base. And Bad Bunny in a crowd full of wrestling fans got huge fucking cheers. This guy's a star. He's a superstar. He's not ethnically famous. He is across the board star, and even more so, I'd argue, after Saturday. But we will talk about the match. At one stage, Voices of Wrestling came out and made a point, and I just want to kind of get like, what do you try spot the obvious holes in here? Rhea Ripley should have won last year, and then we'd have gotten a year of her on the main roster. Does anyone want to point out the obvious kind of... I'll give you a clue if it's not coming to you. What's the flaw in that basic take? If she'd have won last year, we'd have got a year on her on the roster.
I don't know. I feel like I'm at an exam.
I have no idea.
Okay, so Rhea Ripley was wrestling Charlotte last year. Why was she wrestling Charlotte? What was the purpose of that match?
Charlotte was the NXT Women's Champion.
Yes, there you go. Do you see a problem with Rhea Ripley continuing to get the NXT Women's continuing to be the NXT Women's Champion? And like, again, like, she, the one way you have her not be on the main roster is have her to be the NXT Champion. The one way that she was possible for her to be on the roster was because he didn't hold the NXT Women's Championship. And this is something that you're supposed to like, and the way they even wrote it was just like, you know, this had been the drum they'd been banging all year. And it's like, well, you've had a year to think about, there's a big fucking hole in this, and you're supposed to be the ones that's coming out strong and actually having opinions that like actually resonate with people and actually make a difference. We had someone, what's his name? Sorry, Sean Ross Sapp came out at one stage and gave out about Vince McMahon stealing the pop from the wrestlers by being the first person out there. And this was a big one. You got a lot of heat for it. And you know what happens when, and I'll discuss this in a second, but you know what happens when these guys like get a bit of pushback for it? They double down and they get stubborn and they're like, no, this is the opinion I felt most strongly about ever. And it's ridiculous because like, if you'd put thought into it or known what's what, then, and again, this is someone that I like. This is the lad who runs Fightful, and I think he's actually one of the better wrestling journalists and generally more reasonable. I think he just had, just these guys reaching for hot takes in a time where they sense a lot of business can come of them. But again, like, it's Vince McMahon. Okay, what do we know about it? He's not on TV a lot for a start, and he's also the boss of WWE. So if he wanted attention, he could put himself front and center at any stage. But also as well, Vince McMahon, this is the same person who nearly 15 years ago tried to have him himself killed off television because he didn't want to be a TV character anymore. He thought he played out. That was it. He was done. He tried to have himself killed off. Now, unfortunately, you know, the very next week, the whole Benoit thing happened and he had to come back on TV because it was unavoidable. And that storyline got scrapped. But Vince is someone who notoriously, and say what you want about him, this isn't even a pro Vince stance, but he's just notoriously doesn't really want to be on TV, especially in more recent years. And also as well, if you're going to argue that Vince is like addicted to the pop to the point that he's stealing it from his wrestlers, he booked himself as a heel. So it's not like that. Like, if he's a pop addict, where are you getting this from? Like, Katie, like, again, and pops are great. Pops feel great when you're a part of them. Katie, like, when you came back from your two broken arms, I'd say the pop was amazing there, was it? Like, the buzz you were on, like, getting that huge pop, like, probably the loudest you'd ever heard in your life. I'd say that was a great buzz, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. One of the best moments of my life. And I deliberately looked for Keane in the crowd that night as well, just to see was he cheering and popping, just to let you know.
Okay. Well, I was dead. So
would you still say the same if you went out and the crowd all went boo?
This whole thing is such a strange take, because like I never thought about how they were going to open WrestleMania, but then when it was Vince in the roster,
yeah,
that was perfect. Yes. That was everything I want. I cried during the open of WrestleMania because I was like, I got so emotional about a crowd being there and the roster being there and like the planes overhead and like, because it felt like everything was coming back to normal. Yes. You know what I mean? And I genuinely like got emotional. I was crying in the first 5 minutes of WrestleMania, and it was because of Vince. It was because of the promo. It was because of the whole situation. So like that's kind of a baffling take to me, like that people would find an issue with it.
It's like, again, it's something where like Vince didn't steal the pop there. What he did was he gave the pop to every member of his roster and everyone employed by him. He gave them all the pop by like, here's all of us. Everyone's out here. Jinder Mahal was in his gear. We've watched WrestleMania. There was no need for that to happen. Jinder Mahal was not everywhere, but he got a chance to be in his gear in WrestleMania, show off his huge nipples. Remember them? But he got to show them to the world, and that obviously made him happy. Everyone got the pop because of that. And then, like, they couldn't just have everyone stand there. Like, and like, but here's the thing. They couldn't have had, like, even the representatives. Like, they couldn't have had the champions do it. Roman Reigns is a heel. Bobby Lashley's a heel. Someone had to speak and say something, so they couldn't have had them do it. Drew McIntyre may divide opinion. There's a chance to. He may get booed. They don't know what people are going to react to. So it has to be someone big. It has to be someone that can represent all of WWE. Like maybe if they'd have had a Becky Lynch option as a surprise or something, that could have been someone. But again, you'd have been giving away the Becky Lynch comeback for that. So and they probably have plans for how they're going to do that. So there's no one else really there except for Vince to be able to talk and welcome people to the show and just give you that sense of normalcy that like wrestling is back. So it's just reaching for it. And again, I'll get into why these are bad takes as well, because but before I'm going to get to the last WrestleMania bad take, and this is, I'm not even going to name the person this is, but it's someone that's known within the community, and I didn't even call this shit out, like, because it's so bad that like I don't think they meant it. I think they were just looking to say anti-WWE things, and then they accidentally said something that's actually really offensive, because they said that they were sick of seeing the Big E and Apollo feud because both characters were just stereotypes. Think about that one for a second. And now whatever you think about Apollo, think about how's Big E a stereotype? Do you know what I mean? Like what is it that Big E does that makes him stereotypical? Like he's just, you know, it's again, it's one of these things where it's like Dave Meltzer, it's like, you've taught something horrible there and you're just cleaning it up, but like there's something rotten there. That's actually a racist take. Like what you posted there is actually racist. Now, I don't think that they meant it. I don't think they put enough thought into it that they actually had any substance to what they were saying. They were just trying to be a general and as loud as possible. But it's like, there's nothing stereotypical about Big E. He's literally just Big E. He's just himself. Like he's just a guy. So when you're saying stereotypes, I'd love to see Big E just be like, what exactly? How am I stereotypical? What's going on here? You know, Apollo, you could make the argument. I disagree because I think, you know, we don't know that we don't know that, for example, Apollo's new character wasn't like his idea for a start. So I just stay away from that altogether. And also, we don't know that, like, also the one thing that I see in Apollo when we discussed this last week is he's really buying into this character and he's having the best performances of his life. And this feud has been really entertaining. So both men are obviously into this feud and grabbing the opportunity with both hands. So they don't seem to feel that way. So you arguing on their behalf is just a, it's a very, very weird take. Here's where this is difficult as well, though, right? Because fair enough, you have your takes. We all have bad takes. Lord knows, all three of us have had shit takes at some stage where we're like, yeah, I could have done better there. And we usually do. When we get it wrong, we're like, yeah, I got that one wrong. And we'll have a laugh about it. But what do these people do when they get questioned on it? They doubled down and they got stubborn and they started arguing with their fans. Keep in mind this, like, your job is to... I'm reminded of the great Bill O'Herlihy when I think of, like, I remember he kind of did an interview and I listened to it and I got a lot from it, because he's like, the reason that, and for anyone, any, if there's international listeners, Bill O'Herlihy was the voice of Irish football coverage. He was the host of Irish football for years, and Irish football became known as, like, the coverage was more, you'd watch the match just to see the coverage, because it was like a bunch of owl lads just fighting with each other and stuff like that. Well, Bill O'Herlihy talked about the logic. He's like, you never hear my opinion when I'm hosting the show, but I have got opinions. I do think that, but that's not my job. My job is to acknowledge that, like, fans watching may have opinions and they may have feelings and stuff like that, but they mightn't understand what exactly is going on. Like, they see their team concede a goal, for example, and they're like, I don't know what happened there. Like, I know the defense was bad, but I don't know who in the defense was bad. Who was out of position? Like, who wasn't doing their job? Was it a bad call by the manager? Who do I need? I'm angry, but who do I need to direct my anger with? And that's what the analysis is for. So Bill O'Herlihy's job was to play dumb, and then the analyst's job, it doesn't actually matter who wins the argument or who's right. They just need to give point and counterpoint so that the audience member can go, that's my opinion. That's what I think. And they can learn about it, and then they can then take their own opinion, because all that matters is what the audience comes out with. But when these guys get argued with, they fight with their fans. And what is anyone going to go away with, like, when you fight with their fans? By all means, you can disagree and have it out. Like, when we, like, I've had bad takes on social media through Low Blows and Rick Nash and stuff like that, and the Rick Page and stuff like that. Like, I've had bad takes, but what I'll do then is, I'll always, and people mightn't even notice that I do this, but, like, I'll always quote tweet the person if they're arguing with it. And the reason that I'm doing that is because I want people to see their argument. So that pops up on my timeline, and then you can see the other side of it. This is the other point, that even if I disagree with their point, I'm still giving their point, like, to all of my audience there. That's why I'm doing that. And it doesn't matter when you, like, when you're arguing to the death with someone and you're then insulting your fans, like a lot of these people do, they were getting really thick and really salty and really defensive. You're just coming across as know-it-all fans who just can't, like, admit when you've got it wrong. And that just makes people really sour. You're taking an opportunity where you're seeing this as a business opportunity. It's WrestleMania, and this is the time to have your hottest takes and grab the audience and stuff like that. Whatever. That's what you do. You're supposed to be an influencer. Learn what your fucking job is. Learn what the purpose of your job is. And if you have a shit take, just put your hand up and say, mea culpa, got that one wrong. Or just say, agree to disagree. Or have the argument, but do it in a respectful way. Because you come back at some of these guys and you'll kind of, like, joke. Like, I made a little joke to Sean Ross Sapp, but it wasn't even a bad thing. Like, I wasn't even trying to dunk on him or anything. I was just like, yeah, that's not a great take. I think he was just because of this. And then he's like, yeah, well, what the fuck do you think? And I'm like, all right. I think I just got back to him. I'm like, go to bed, Sean. It's late. And it's just like that. They're eating the heads off anyone who disagrees with them. And it's just shit. And it's just not what the spirit of wrestling is. We can disagree and we can have it out. And we can have different opinions and we can argue. But by all means, just actually make sure that you know why you're doing what you're doing. And if you're getting it wrong, like, again, remember that when you get it wrong, it shows how little you understand as well. So you're showing your ass there. So if you're going to put yourself out there, like, for example, the guy who looked really racist as a result of trying to be sympathetic towards people people he felt were being stereotyped, but actually ended up looking racist himself. Remember that before clicking send, because, you know, whatever about a tweet, then you have shows like this actually talking about you as an end result. Anyway, look, there's a lot of good to talk about, so we will get on to that. Let's move on with the show and let's talk about the good from the week.
Low blows. You're gonna poop your pants.
I felt after a bit of a Rick rant today, we needed a bit of levity. And yeah, just to confirm, we did, for anyone newer listeners, yes, we did have a skit where we reenacted Mae Young shitting herself on the air. What I like most about that skit is how surprised she gets by, like, she's fallen asleep and, like, the music wakes her up in the middle of it. Like, she just gets a fright in the middle of her music, but then remembers that she has to do a promo and then it's like, oh, low blows. Absolutely brilliant stuff. Good to hear Dodd's voice in the show again. Best of the week. This is awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, in at number five, let's talk about the good from NXT UK.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, like, NXT UK had a really solid show this week. It was kind of billed as like their kind of takeover special, which, I mean, they still have the same set. They have no crowd. They don't really have anything that can set it apart as a takeover special. But as like a 2-hour episode of NXT UK, like, I thought it was really, really good. Great main event between Walter and Rampage. It was good to see the jet lag didn't affect Walter flying over from takeover to defend his NXT UK title. No, I was actually really glad that they didn't really reference that or anything. You know, it was just like, yeah, here's the match.
It was
really good. But the match that I absolutely adored from this was Noam Dar versus Tyler Bate, number one contenders match for the Heritage Cup. And, like, we've talked about before how the Heritage Cup, like, isn't to everyone's taste. Like, I think, Kian, you're not crazy about it.
No.
But, like, what I loved about this match is, I hope it starts to bridge the gap maybe between the people who don't really like the Heritage Cup stuff. Because what I feel it was an excellent example was, is the first round was pure World of Sport, Johnny Saint spot. But then it was like reeling in the ears for wrestling. Like, the more they went through the rounds, the kind of more modern the style got. Like, the middle section was all about strikes. The last round was all about sort of, like, they had dives and they had, like, bigger moves in it. And I absolutely love the progression through, like, the six rounds. And I've never been massive on Noam Dar, but, like, this match, I thought he looked like a superstar. I thought his strikes and all were just, like, off the charts. I love the story he told. I loved having Shaw Samuels and Trent Seven in the corners, and they kind of explored a little bit the history of Shaw Samuels and Noam Dar, like, the fact that they've been, like, friends for, like, almost as long as Tyler and Trent. And I just thought it was the best rounds match that they've done on NXT UK. And, like, look, it probably won't change a lot of people's minds, but it might change a few minds to come around to that round style of match. And yeah, it was just brilliant. It was in my top five Mania week matches. So I would watch it. Yeah, I actually drew out a list of my top five Mania matches, and it's sitting there at number five at the moment.
We need to get that before the end. If we do forget that, like, we'll get that at the very end of the show. Katie's top five Mania matches. You've put in work. We have to show it for, so fair play. In at number four, I won't be too long on this. AEW, Jericho reminded us that he is just an unreal babyface, and he continues to make us feel whatever he wants us to feel at any stage. So the Inner Circle came out and had their first proper promo since turning babyface. Obviously, last week they had the big brawl, and that was in This Is Awesome as well. So they had the big brawl with the Pinnacle, now MJF's new stable. But Jericho came out and just absolutely roasted all of them. It was awesome, and I'm not going to do it justice by trying to repeat lines or anything. So just, if you haven't seen it, they put up all their clips on YouTube, so check it out. They will have that up
in full, I guarantee you. What I loved the most about it was he was making the other wrestlers in the ring mark out at the same time. Okay, you could see the other wrestlers. It wasn't just like, you know, you remember when Brock Lesnar was standing in the ring when Paul Heyman cut a promo, and you could tell that Brock didn't know, he didn't care what Paul Heyman was going to say. He's just like, you do your promo shit. But then like Heyman would say something really clever and Brock would be like, that was really good. it was like a much more enthusiastic version of that, because like, keep in mind the people he's in the ring with. You've got Hernandez and Ortiz, and then you've got Sammy Guevara, and obviously Jack Swagger as well would be a bit more experienced, but these are guys who would have grown up watching Jericho for the most part, and then he comes out and cuts one of the best promos of his career, and they're just in the ring like, yeah, yeah. They're absolutely geeked and buzzing, and they're just echoing how you're feeling at home. Jericho continues to be absolutely amazing in the ring and at promos, regardless of what you think of him outside the ring. And in a big week for Jericho, I also recommend you check out the Stone Cold Steve Austin Broken Skull Session interview. Like, you know, it's not like groundbreaking or anything like that. It's not kind of what we expected. You know, Jericho was going to shoot on Vince McMahon and stuff like that. It was a Broken Skull Session with Chris Jericho. It was exactly what it sounds like, them running through his career. But Jericho's had an amazing career, and he's very outspoken. He's not afraid to kind of, like, especially now, he's not afraid to kind of talk about where Vince McMahon made decisions. And like, that's kind of interesting, seeing Vince get openly criticized and slagged a bit on his own network. But like, it's not in a malicious way, and it's not in the way the ratty AEW way that we don't like and we talk about when they do it on this show. It was in a kind of more loving way, and nice way as well, where he kind of he talked about a lot of the good of working with him as well, and how there was a point where he only wanted to work with Vince McMahon. So it was just a great interview by someone who's had a great career, and you do forget, like, again, like, if you've read all the books and stuff like that, maybe you don't, but like, man, that guy has some stories to tell. They go through all his clips as well, and it's great to get to go back on them and realize just how he's evolved. Because consider that for Jericho, it's not like when you interview The Undertaker, you're just like, you know, they're the only separate part of his career that's different, apart from the very start, is when he was the American Badass. So you can discuss that a little bit, and it's cool to get some insight in that. When you interview Jericho, every segment of the interview is about a completely different character, because he reinvents himself so much, and he talks about how he reinvents himself and stuff like that. So really worth checking out. Jericho, big strong week for him, and he spoke about as well, just like, there's a lot of good lessons in there for wrestlers. Like, if you have 1 minute on TV, there's your chance. Like, again, I kind of make that point on Low Blows all the time, where it's like, that wrestler hasn't been given a chance by WWE, and it's like, they're on Raw last week, they had a chance, that's their chance, and if they didn't make it interesting. And Jericho kind of embodies that, where he's like, if you gave me 30 seconds on like WCW when I wasn't getting much time or opportunities, I still took them, and I still remembered that you were going to, and you still left the show talking about how good Jericho was. And that's a really good example. There's a lot of good lessons to learn, but also just great stories for fans and stuff like that. Check it out, and check out the promo if you haven't seen it already. It is peak Chris Jericho, fantastic stuff. I was such a fan. In at number three, let's talk about the good from Raw.
So I did struggle with Raw this week, and it's just because the Raw after Mania is usually like not as big as Mania itself, but it's a draw of Mania week, because, you know, you've usually got the international crowds, and you've got call-ups and surprises, and it's you know, it's an event in itself. And obviously because of COVID, we didn't get that kind of Raw. So you were coming from like having crowds at WrestleMania and that kind of high to being back in the Thunderdome. We didn't get any call-ups or anything like that. We didn't even get much progression on a lot of the storylines, to be honest. But the couple that we did get progression on done really, really well. And what I wanted to talk about specifically is Charlotte Flair's promo, which I think is the best promo she's ever cut. She came out looking better than I have ever seen her. Like, I mean, I don't want to dwell on this, but her legs, oh my God, unbelievable. She just looked like a superstar, you know what I mean? And she came out and she just cut this very honest but heel promo about how she's not going to apologize for how good she is and how she should have been on WrestleMania. And she talked about like how there was excitement in the locker room when people found out that Charlotte Flair wasn't going to go on Mania, you know? So like, there was girls in the locker room clamoring to step up and take her spot. And like, it wasn't done in like a malicious bitchy way. It was just very much stating the facts, like, you know, like, I'm a roadblock, to them getting on WrestleMania because I'm always there because I'm so good. And now this is their chance to step up. But you know what? At the end of the day, I'm still the best wrestler in this division. And it was, she was talking like, and it was very like, normally I don't like wink, wink, nudge, nudge to real life situations and promos, but she was talking about how nothing was her fault on the lead up to WrestleMania. Now we know she's talking about things like the false pregnancy diagnosis, the COVID, Andrade. We know she's talking about all that, but she's talking storyline wise and she's like, it's not my fault Lacey Evans got pregnant. It's not my fault my father turned up and went off the rails. It's not my fault I ended up as Asuka's tag partner. You know, like all of these kept me off WrestleMania. You know, they tried to placate me by saying like, oh, but you've done 5 manias, do you need one more? And it's just, she is a heel, but she's just like a justified heel. And you're sitting there like, yeah, you know what? You should have been on Mania, Charlotte. But then she comes out and she interrupts, not interrupts, but she comes, oh, she does. Yeah, she interrupts Asuka and Rhea Ripley's rematch. And like, so she's still doing heel things, but like the promo was just so fire that like, you're just willingly going to accept Charlotte back into the main event situation. You know what I mean? And I think because the tag turmoil and stuff wasn't as strong at WrestleMania, you're just like, oh, you know what? Charlotte Flair is back in the main event, but we need her there. And you're kind of angry with yourself almost for having that thought. But it was just so well done. And it's just, I would actually, if you don't watch Raw this week, go back and find her promo because it really, really was that excellent. And it was that natural and it was delivered so well. And it was just, it's amazing. And if we're going to get like a mix of Asuka, Rhea and Charlotte now, like I am all for that. We already know Rhea and Charlotte can have absolute bangers. We know Charlotte and Asuka can have absolute bangers. So it's a really interesting mix going forward, I think, for the Raw women's title.
It's, do you know what I love about it as well? And you touched on that at it there, like, again, it's a perfect character because, and it's a perfect heel character because it's someone, the best heel characters are the people that believe the arguments they're saying. And you could absolutely accept that from Charlotte's point of view, none of it is her fault. But when you hear someone be like, and then this happened and this happened and this happened and none of it is my fault, that's a very heelish standpoint anyway. You know what I mean? So, but she believes it. So there's a bit of bite to it. Yeah. There's the references and the wink and nods to the real life situation, but also as well, it's the basics. And it was what we were kind of given them credit for as they kind of dug themselves out of the hole with Charlotte and Lacey there, where we're like, they're actually like just telling us, this is my motivation, this is what I was thinking, this is why I make the decisions I'm taking. And then all of a sudden we're invested, and that's all you need. Like, that's all you need to be invested. So no, excellent stuff. I totally agree, it was an excellent promo from Charlotte. Great show.
Yeah. And just the other thing, like, I'll always mention The Miz, and like, we're going to talk about it. I hope we're going to talk about it, about WrestleMania, for being the superstar that he is. But we had a Miz TV, and what I found really interesting with this is they seem to be kind of teasing Miz and Morrison not being on the same page. So after having this like great run together again, they did a Miz TV where Maryse was the special guest because there's a new season of Miz and Miz is coming up. But like, he didn't pass information to Morrison. Morrison didn't know why she was there. He didn't know she was a guest. He didn't know about the TV show debuting. And it was very much like Miz's focus was completely on Maryse and like ignoring Morrison as his tag partner. And it was just, it was very subtle, but it was very, very well done. That, you know, Morrison was feeling kind of ignored and not shining like a star. And anyway, what happened was it ended up with a handicap match with Damian Priest, because obviously I think Bad Bunny is finished now or whatever. And they bet Damian Priest in the handicap match, which they should, because it's a 2-on-1 handicap, like, in their former champions. And they did it in a heel cheaty way, so you can still argue that Damian Priest didn't get a fair shot to beat both of them. So like, I'm excited about this storyline moving forward, even without Bad Bunny, because you're going to have probably Miz and Damian Priest being the focal point, and you're probably going to have Morrison on the side getting more and more resentful, and you're probably going to have a split, or you're going to have at least like interesting dynamics between the three of them going forward. So I just thought that progressed really well from WrestleMania, because the other thing I loved was like, they're now trying to take credit for how well Bad Bunny did, you know what I mean? So it's like, rather than come out and be ashamed they lost to a celebrity at WrestleMania, they're just like, see that star we made, like, we are the business. And I'm just like, I love that heel take on it. It's like, oh, we didn't win, cool, we're going to take credit for the win anyway. And it just, like, The Miz is the greatest wrestler in the world, and I will hear absolutely no arguments on this, and we will talk about WrestleMania, but they're the two segments I thought that actually progressed storylines from WrestleMania in an interesting way towards Backlash.
Love it. And Kendo says, really hope we get full-fledged heel Charlotte for a bit as opposed to flipping between heel face tweener. Yeah, just make her the queen. That's her best character. And it's what we all respond to her constantly as. So yeah, just make her the queen. She knows she's the best. And there's kind of a bit of truth to that as well, which will just wind us up a bit more. I love the direction they've gone. I hope they stick with it. In at number two, let's talk about NXT, which like TakeOver was TakeOver. And it's tough to even pick matches. So I've just picked the best two. As voted by you guys as well on Twitter. And thank God, I was like, I'm glad that we're in sync on this because these were the two matches that I loved the most as well. But all of TakeOver is good. Both nights, they've got a stacked roster now on NXT. And when they're firing on all cylinders, which they have been for the past couple of months, it really shows. But I want to talk first about Walter against Ciampa because we made fun of this match last week. We were making jokes about how predictable it was and stuff like that. And it was. Like, there's no two ways about it. He was booked in a match that was pre-recorded on NXT UK the night later. So there was never any doubt about this, but yet, so not everything in wrestling needs to be unpredictable. This was a match of the year candidate against Tommaso Ciampa. It was absolutely fantastic. It was fought at an absolute breakneck pace. What I love about Walter, and it kind of twigged for me the first time in this match, is he wrestles Ric Flair psychology. So basic ring psychology is very simple, where you have like the babyface shine at the start, they get cut off, there's the heat, there may be a couple of host spots thrown in, and then the babyface would make their comeback, and then whatever the finish is, they go into that. That's like 99% of wrestling stories. Ric Flair wrestled very differently. In Ric Flair matches, there would be a shine at the start, there would be a cutoff, but then like that'd be very brief. And then like for the most of the match, as you remember it, the heel is beating the piss out of Ric Flair, and Ric Flair is just surviving, and he cheats to get ahead, and Ric Flair almost gets host spots because he cheats to get ahead for a bit, and the crowd are booing, and he brings the crowd down again, and then the face comes up. And it was the simplest. He just developed a really good basic story that we weren't used to seeing, and that's why we think of Ric Flair matches as classics, and we think of him as the best of all time, because it was always fresh and different. That's what Walter does. For someone so dominant, he's on offense actually not a lot. You know, he'll have a little heat, but like for the most of his matches and the best matches you see, it'll always be the babyface attacking him and the babyface getting closer and closer and getting on top. And is he going to do it? Is he going to do it? Just crawl over and get him. But Walter's offense, when he hits it, is so impactful that the babyface is down. And the babyface then, when they get back on top, they're injured and they're just working so slowly. Like maybe if they get to hit a big move, because they're after taking a power bomb off Walter, so if they do hit a big move, they have to sell for a little bit and they go against the ropes. And that was what this match was. It was Ciampa on top for the majority of it, and it was maybe he'll do it, and we knew logically that he wasn't going to, but it makes you disconnect when they tell a story well. It makes you go, what if? And you know at some stage he's not going to, but you allow yourself to think for a second that he's going to, and you're like, you know what, this match is more fun if I believe Ciampa's going to win, so I'm going to just let myself think it, and then you start going with it and it becomes better and better. I loved as well that the finish was a chop. It like, and there's a lot of talk about this and a lot of criticism for it online as well. Not a lot of criticism. Most people love this match, but there is people out there saying that it made Ciampa look really weak. I didn't think so at all. The thing with Walter is he doesn't have a finisher. He just beats you until your body gives out. that's what the story of that match was, that Ciampa had taken so much that when Walter came back with it, used the biggest chop you've seen Walter throw, Ciampa just couldn't kick out. He just didn't have any energy. Walter had just made him succumb. And that's then in a match where Walter's actually been dominated quite a lot. If you look at it, if you're to put it on paper and look at who got the offense, like in football, if you looked at the possession stats, Ciampa would be winning 75-25, but like at the same time he still come out of it because how decisive the end was. We go, Walter's unbeatable man. But we've been on an emotional roller coaster thinking that for a second, even though we know Walter's wrestling a pre recorded match for the same belt the next night, we're thinking that maybe Ciampa will do it. I also love Finn Balor against Karrion Kross. Apologies. Amazing main event. Really, really good. And we kind of telegraphed this as well, that they told us what the story of the match was going to be, where Balor was going to be cold, calculated. He was going to make Kross get emotional. And there was a bit of that at the start. And he was making him make mistakes. Like, Balor was doing something, getting one over on him. Or even Kross was getting one over on Balor, but Balor just look at him and smile, and like, you just go, do you think that hurt? Give me more of that. What was that, your best shot? And then Kross would run out and Balor would duck out of the way because Kross was getting emotional. But there was just this inevitability about Karrion Kross that Balor sold really well. Even when Balor gets on top and hits the coup de grace, Kross kicks out, but he kicks out in a way that his right shoulder goes up and around Balor's throat, and then he gets him in the straitjacket straight away. I love kick out count, like the kick outs directly into moves. I hope it doesn't become like the super kick and that it's everyone's doing it in every match and it becomes a fad. I feel like the one count, I feel like that's something that you can absolutely see indie wrestlers doing a lot, to the point that we become sick of it, but now it's fresh and I really enjoyed it. And then just Balor selling for the entire match, like he just sold it like an absolute champ. He was like, he was never sympathetic in any way, do you know what I mean? Like, because he was still being strong, he was still being true to himself and his character. Balor now is an absolute badass, so we don't want to see him like, you know, crying. We don't want to see him beating. We don't want to see him pleading towards the crowd or anything like that. The Ricky Morton sell wouldn't have done, but it was like a guy who was still trying to give everything he had. But like, again, similar to Ciampa, it was just Kross was inevitable and there was no way around it, which made Kross look better, but it also let Balor go out in the shield and kind of be continue to get his badass stripes. And I imagine that may be the end for Balor in NXT, though I still do want the Walter match. And I think we're probably going to get it for NXT UK. But even if it is and he goes back up to the main roster or anything like that, I think we're going to get it. I think we're going to get a good kind of, it's going to be for the best. Also as well, I want to give a shout out to NXT's debut on Tuesday nights. I got to watch it this morning and they went out trying to make a statement, which a lot of the shows after WrestleMania every year, by the time you get to say the Tuesday or Wednesday show, they're hangover shows. They're just, everyone's exhausted. You're exhausted as a fan. So to see NXT and Raw was a tough watch as well, but NXT went out and was like, this is our first night on Tuesdays and we have to make an impact on this. So we're going to put our best foot forward. And they presented kind of a Raw after WrestleMania. Obviously Santos Escobar retained the Cruiserweight Championship, which I think was a smart decision. Also as well, like with the stuff hanging over the match and everything else as well, and kind of the mixed reactions that the match and the feud provoked because of things outside the ring. I think as well, like it was just a smarter play at this stage for everyone involved to have Santos go over, and also as well, it was respecting his reign and actually letting him, because he could never fully say that he was undisputed. Kind of the storyline did throw question marks and an asterisk around his Cruiserweight title reign. So having him be the better of the two and winning that match, and especially in the ladder match where it doesn't hurt anyone, I thought that was definitely the right call. But then they went out and they did the spoiler alert, by the way, if you haven't seen NXT. So they went out and they had Santos Escobar, who's still a bit hurting. He was in the ladder match just a few days beforehand, comes out and says he's the dominant and he's overconfident now. He's like, nobody can beat me. I've taken this division to new heights. This was a forgotten championship, which is all true, by the way. And you're buying into it as he says it. And he's like, I can beat anyone. He issues an open challenge. Kushida comes out and accepts it and beats him. And now Kushida's the new Cruiserweight champion, which I love because it makes so much sense for Escobar to be losing. He's weaker. He's just coming off a ladder match. But also as well, it's exciting, different booking. And NXT are getting good at that, doing unpredictable title changes, like the NXT women's tag team titles. Like they crowned new champions and had them lose the belts on the exact same night. It just keeps you guessing and means that you have to tune in every week. Also as well, a shout out, a lot of you would have seen this online. But obviously you had Raquel Gonzalez come out at the start and kind of turn a bit babyface, and you had her celebrate her winning the NXT Women's Championship. And then you had Dakota Kai in there. Because of Corbin Keane, like, predicting that Dakota was going to turn on him, every time she was in the ring with her, I'm waiting for the turn. And they did do a twist, but it wasn't in the way you expected. So first they had Taya Valkyrie, who's Frankie Monet now. She made her debut and it's just like, basically, watch out for me. I'm going to be on your back and I'm coming for that belt. And you think that's the segment. You're like, cool, we've got a debut of a known indie wrestler now on NXT. The women's title is revitalized. And you're like, right, that's it. There's the end of the segment. But then Rhea Ripley's music hits. And you're like, oh, what the fuck is going on here? And you're like, the last time Rhea was on NXT, Raquel beat her and sent her off NXT. That was the end of Rhea on NXT. She came out with the Raw Women's Championship. They squared up and then they just tap the titles together, and then you're like, that's a really cool moment, that's deadly. And then Bianca Belair's music hit, and then Bianca Belair comes out with the SmackDown Women's Championship, and then they get in the ring and they do their little Justice League pose, standing all beside each other, and it's just like, this is cool. And then in the background you see a video of the three of them, like, just starting out in NXT in 2019, and it was a really cool moment, and like, kind of a real justification for NXT, because we were all okay with Rhea and Bianca winning. We wanted to see Bianca win, and we'll talk about the triumph that was her match in one moment, I'm sure. But like, again, just to have that moment, it was excellent. It was a real, like, kind of post-WrestleMania Raw or NXT or SmackDown kind of buzz. And it was probably the best of, like, when Raw was kind of a bit of a letdown, I was glad that we got to have it through NXT. So a really strong week for NXT. But of course, there's only one thing we can talk about. If you're here for the analysis of the show, you're here to talk about this. So ladies and gentlemen, it's time to talk about all the good from WrestleMania. Corporate Keane, over to you.
Yeah. There's so much here. Like, it's two big full days of stuff. But I'm prepared. The first one, right? And we kind of mentioned it already. Yeah, the intro to WrestleMania, when Vince McMahon's on the stage, all the wrestlers are on the stage, and there's this big sort of moment where, like, the fans are cheering, like fans are there in person cheering a wrestling show. And I do like how kind of the pop was given to everyone. So that was cool. Then there was a weather delay. And I know that's a bit of a weird thing. So this is awesome. But, like, I actually thought this kind of added to the event quite a lot. I wasn't watching it live, so I was able to skip through, like, parts of it, which made it a lot easier. But I didn't skip through all of it because I thought some of it was actually quite good. I thought, like, that basically they did impromptu promos with everyone. And I just think if there was any sort of, like, event, like a sporting event, or in this case, event, you know, presented like a sport, if there was anything to be delayed by weather, this is it. Because I mean, you know, apparently it happened in the Masters. I don't think in the Masters they're gonna go back to Rory McIlroy and he's gonna be like, well, let me tell you something, you know, this you know what I mean, like, this is pure amazing entertainment.
He's just in a little log cabin and he's like, I've been waiting here for a green jacket all day, brother.
Yeah, you know what I mean, like, this is the perfect event to have to, like, go backstage and talk to people and just, you know, hear what they have to say. Because you've got, like, the Kevin Owens promo, it gave MVP a fucking chance to speak, which, yes, was what WrestleMania needed anyway. So I mean, like, so there was certainly benefits to it. I loved the Kevin Patrick, I think is his name. I love that it's now an Irish lad doing backstage interviews, and
he's brilliant. He's excellent.
I love him. It's just the second I hear his accent, I'm like, way, what are you
doing? Go on, lads.
He's on a Raw Talk and he does main events commentary as well. Fun fact, in case you didn't know.
He's very good on Raw Talk. He's very, very good. Like, he can keep up. He's like, he's the next Renee Young. Like, you know, he can keep up with everyone. Like, he can have the banter. He's not just a generic kind of good looking guy that just says whatever he's told to say. He has a laugh and he uses his irises quite a lot to play off. Like, he's very, very good.
So the wait, what I found mad about the wait is that, like, this, like when this entire thing happened, I was like, oh man, it's because of the pandemic, you know what I mean? In my own head, I'm still thinking, like, oh, you know, it's because there's all this crazy shit that's happened over the last year, this adds to it. And I realized, like, this could actually have happened at any WrestleMania where it's, like, outdoors, you know. This is nothing to do with, like, a pandemic or anything, but it's just, it would be like this WrestleMania where this happens, do you know what I mean? Like, if there was, like, just to add to the chaos. But yeah,
I thought also as well, live, it felt like fucking COVID. Like, yeah, and it's not COVID's fault. It's rain. But yeah, you're just like, we can't have anything. Like, this is going to get ruined now. So there was that dread there as well. As well as it being an amazing moment to be watching TV. Like, WrestleMania is ruined potentially and they just have to wing it. It was fascinating TV. Like, you had, like, they were just going, over to you in the commentary desk. And they're like, we're wearing ponchos now. Over to you, MVP, backstage. I'm really ready for WrestleMania. Over to you, back on Raw Talk. And then it's Peter Rosenberg, who literally at one stage says, I need to go to the bathroom. Back to you on commentary. Fascinating. It was fast, the quickest link you'll ever see. It was amazing.
I loved it. Yeah, but you know what I loved the most with this, right? And this is something that I thought was really, really cool. Like, you're already anticipating the first match in front of a live crowd again for in over a year. This wasn't just like a regular opening WrestleMania match. This was like something complete. Like, this is something special. Do you know what I mean? So you're already waiting for it. We're like, you know, holding your breath, like anticipating it. And then you've got this big 45 minute delay. And the funniest part about it as well is that they already opened the show. So they already did the whole, like, you know, welcome to WrestleMania. And everybody's like, woo! And the anthem and everything. Everyone's like, yeah. And then the commentator's like, okay, this is a bit awkward now, actually, because you're going to have to wait for an extra 45 minutes. Just a couple of minutes, you know, while we get things going and end up going on for a while. But I thought it was really well managed. Something that I thought was also really funny is that, like, the first match, right, is Bobby Lashley and Drew McIntyre. And what's Bobby Lashley's entrance? A big fucking lightning bolt. It's like, could you have done that like any differently? Like, of course it'd be a lightning bolt. The one person who has like a big fuck off lightning bolt for his entrance. Like, I was blown away by having fans there for a start. Like, that's to go out and see, like, and hear, like, actual people, like, no piped in bullshit, like, actual real people. I'll be honest, I still don't think it is, like, the safe thing to do. I don't necessarily agree with it being the way it is, especially with the collective. I don't know if any of you have heard about, like, the GCW shows that happened during the week. Yeah, apparently it wasn't run well at all from a safety standpoint. Your mic's off, Eric.
your man who got sick. There was two people who got sick in the ring, and they continued wrestling at one stage.
Oh yeah,
they wrestled on vomit. Like,
I wasn't even talking about that. Yeah, that's even more. Like. So there's a lot. GCW would certainly a trip. But one person on Reddit was like, if you're at the collective shows, please get tested. My friend tested positive for COVID and he was at every single one. So but that shouldn't be a shock. You know what I mean? Like, if you put, it's the same at WrestleMania. Honestly, like, unless you're vaccinated, you shouldn't really be. Like, even with vaccinations, if cases are high, you should still be, you know, a bit, I don't know. I don't agree with them being there, but I'm also aware that I have no control over whether or not WWE are going to put fans there. So as somebody who's sitting on the other side of the world, I'm just going to enjoy it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I've got no say in the matter. So I might as well get emotional and feel the goosebumps as we have fans, you know what I mean, for the first time in over a year. Oh my God. The match. Do any of you have anything you want to say about the match before I say my piece here?
No, like, I think this is all you. I think you got it. Like, this is a keen match.
Lashley
so
retained. Yeah, fuck all you. Lashley fucking retained. Yes, yes. I was so sure that Drew was winning. Like, because you talked me into it as well. I was like, because you're right. Like, it was a very, like, I would have considered this to be like a fairly predictable match the other way. You know what I mean? Like, McIntyre, yeah, getting his moment in front of the fans and kind of like a happy, yeah, even if he loses again on Raw next night or whatever, but just kind of a happy moment. Mm. And Lashley retained. And all it took was MVP to go, Drew. And Drew was like, what? Like, like, I have never once been distracted at ringside before. Who could that possibly be calling my name? We're in a building where there's 30,000 people also calling my name, but this name sounds different. This voice, I must stop immediately in my title match at WrestleMania to look over and see who that could possibly be. Could it be my mom? Could it be a friend? Could it be a long lost cousin? Who knows? But I need to take the eyes off the prize. Put the eyes away and call my name. That's more important. And it backfired. And it's gas because, like, I was literally like, I do my Key and Fabe podcast on the on the Patreon, and like, I was taking notes during this, and one note I have was that Bobby Lashley, you know, he's using the wrong finisher. You know what I mean? Like, the Hurt Lock is excellent against smaller men. You know, even as talented as they are, if you catch a smaller man, even a regular sized man who's smaller than Lashley in a Hurt Lock, they're fucked. But with Drew, you know, he's bigger, he's taller. I don't know if it's going to be as effective, and he just destroyed him. And I was like, yeah. Oh, I'm so happy, man. MVP walking around with the The Hurt Business is not dead. It's just a lot smaller than it was.
It's just downsized.
Yeah, it's downsized. It is what it is. But I'm so happy Lashley still has the gold. I really didn't think I'd be feeling that after the first match. We mentioned the tag team turmoil. Mandy Rose fell. The one thing the one thing I took from this and the one thing I found really, really funny was when she, I don't know if any of you saw this because it was only on Twitter, she put up a video of herself backstage at Mania and she was like, oh, sorry, guys, like, this is pretty embarrassing. And then Titus O'Neil comes up behind her and it's like, don't worry, it happens to the best of us.
Ah, yes.
Like, that's perfect, you've made it. Like, and Danny, you see the picture of her like mid-fall. It's so, like, she's proper, like, floating. Yeah. Oh, it's so funny.
Have you seen the one where someone's photoshopped Edge spearing her into it?
No, I haven't.
That
is perfect.
Amazing. Have you seen what they're doing on Raw now, though? Like,
oh,
now,
they have to ruin it.
Yeah, it's a storyline now. Oh, it's like when Titus had to pretend to fall all the time. It's like, like, if you want the storyline on, like, if you want Vince McMahon to buy in and give you, like, all the TV time, just fall. It's like, it's guaranteed way to work, like.
or the me holding. Can we, actually, look, I know I don't want to talk about Raw, because we are obviously talking about Mania, but did, and Kate, you were obviously covering Raw. Did I see this right? Did Mandy and Dana have a title match, right, for the tag titles, and then lost by count out deliberately and said, it's not worth it?
Yeah, actually, I probably should have mentioned that, but... That whole match and segment was so awful that, like, I had to stop watching for a few minutes. It was just too much. Like, and it was very much like Nia Jax seeing, like, Mandy Rose get a pop for falling the night before and was like, well, I'm going to do it 6 times in this match and beat it to death. So the whole thing irritated me.
It's like the me hole thing. Where, like, that was just fucking, I don't know. But, anyway, we already talked about the match. It's the fucking next match I am so excited to talk about. Oh my fucking God. Right. When I saw that Seth Rollins and Cesaro were scrapping at WrestleMania, I was like, I love Cesaro. Cesaro's one of my absolute favorite wrestlers right now. I love him to fucking bits. And Seth Rollins is one of the best in the world in the ring. I don't care. He's unreal. But I still wasn't convinced. I was still, do you remember, like, last year when it was like, was it Brian and Zayn had a match? And it was grand. It was, I mean, they're no fans, so obviously, like, that plays a part as well. But you see it on pay-per-views all the time in WWE where, like, they'll have two amazing wrestlers, but it won't be, like, the main event. It'll be a match further down. So, you know, it'll be, like, a 10-minute match, and it'll be kind of, it'll be good, adequate, grand, decent, you know, that kind of way, but nothing that you'd really, you know, leave the show talking about. This match had me like a fucking 7-year-old, like, proper, like, let's go! I love Cesaro, and the thing, so this match, obviously, Seth Rollins, he survives the neutralizer, he survives the swing, and he's like, oh man, I am doing best to you. So it's like, he has all the athleticism in the world, but like an ego to match, and that's obviously his downfall, and Cesaro obviously has the strength to counter his athleticism as well. So Cesaro's a threat, Rollins underestimates him, and the thing about Cesaro that is just the reason I love him so much, and like the reason I can't wait to see him do more in a singles run, is because he has the absolute fucking best moveset in the world for like a babyface coming back against someone. You know what I mean? Like, it's proper like superhero shit. It's just fucking class. When he grabs Seth Rollins and like he counters the curb stomp into an uppercut, which was fucking deadly. And then the UFO where he puts no hands, just puts Seth Rollins on his fucking neck and just spins around the place. The whole crowd's losing their shit. Then he obviously gets him in the swing, you know, hits him fucking, I think it was like 20. See, it's hard to count the swings. And this was initially, might say something stupid, where it's like the fans don't fucking count the rotations. They just go 1, 2, 3, 4. It's kind of like, right, well, now I don't know how many swings there were because you just counted like ahead. What?
They're just excited. Leave them
alone. That's the gas thing. It's like, I'm giving out to them. Yeah, if I was there live, I'd be like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
77, 79, 107.
It's like, Keen, it was 5. I'm like, I counted 77. oh my God. Like, fucking set. Like, oh man. Like, it was just, the reason I love this so much is because obviously this is like the third match in front of the fans. It's still early days. Everyone's still buzzing for everything that they're seeing. And it's just like Cesaro finally gets his, I think they mentioned it in the video package, didn't they? He didn't have any singles matches at WrestleMania up to this point. He finally gets one, and it's like, it's his moment. You know what I mean? It's not a main event, but you can tell this is his moment. Yeah. Like, he gets a massive pop. He looks like an absolute fucking star. Corey Graves on commentary talking about how much like everyone behind the scenes respects him and all the fans respect him. And you can tell that it's real. You know what I mean? You can tell he's really, really well loved, like, behind the scenes and all that. You know what I mean? And I just, Oh, I just fucking love Cesaro so much. And the match was just, because I considered Cesaro the favorite going in, the way they were talking about him and stuff. But again, it's not a guarantee. So I'm like, I really hope they don't fuck this up. I really hope they give Cesaro that moment. And they did. And I was just like, ah, fucking class. Are any of you on the Cesaro hype train? Any of you seen him getting gold this year?
Yeah, no, I love it.
I think it's literally just him and Big E when it comes to like who could possibly dethrone like Roman. Do you know what I mean? Like when I'm looking at like further down the year or whatever, it's so good, so good. Big E, speaking of, introduced the New Day. And yes, this gave me goosebumps. Oh my goosebumps. Yeah. Again, I'm like, right, like actual like logistics and personal safety aside, these are real life fans giving like Big E and the New Day a moment that they've waited like over a year for, you know what I mean? To go around and be like, oh, Tampa, and he's in his hometown as well. Well, I normally don't consider WrestleMania a hometown crowd, but obviously there's no international fans around that really this time around, so kind of is a hometown crowd. And he gets to introduce them, and it's like they're reunited, and it's just such a cool moment. I loved it, absolutely loved it. And then we get to that match, and this is why night one has me buzzing, right? Like, you see how excited I've gotten over two matches so far. This third match does not stop. It does not stop here. Like, I'm still buzzing, right? Because we get to see the debut of one of my favorite characters on Raw by far, Omos, teaming with AJ Styles, and this fucking match. Oh my god, like obviously like it starts with AJ in the ring against Kofi and Xavier, and I really really don't want Omos tagged in. They're like doing everything they can. I actually think Omos initially was tagged in, and they're like, no, what, you scared AJ? Oh, come on AJ, why don't you come in? He's like, yeah, all right, fine. And the funniest part, like this, like the Ashley Wood moment, this is for me a Mania moment. Omos getting tagged in. Xavier Woods, he sees AJ going for the tag. He's like, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck. He immediately goes up to the top turnbuckle and just leaps off, like, come on, come on, come on. And AJ gets the tag. Funniest, like Xavier Woods' reaction, Kofi's reaction, and like fucking the fans are like, oh shit, and then Omos is just smiling away, like he's just doing his shopping or something. Like this is just a casual like Sunday afternoon or Saturday afternoon where he's just like, this is gas, like I'm massive and yous are tiny, like I don't have to do anything here. And he gets in, and like Xavier Woods does the whole, you know, you see it in MMA where he's like kicking the legs out from under him, and every kick it just bounces straight off, and he's like, what are you even doing, like just lie down, like it's over. And they just bounce off him, and like he fucking destroys him. It's deadly. And the best part about this is the fans love him. The fans absolutely adore him. You got a mad pop, people chanting for Omos. And like, interesting thing, right? Like, he won a title in his first match, like first ever, you know, WWE match. First, it's his debut at WrestleMania, and he wins the title. Surely that's history, yeah? I don't think anybody's done that, have they? In their debut, winning gold at WrestleMania.
I don't know, but I'm definitely going to keep it for our future table quiz.
Yeah. Oh, man. Omos wins gold. Not only am I happy with the result, but I'm happy with how it went. Like, going into this, I wasn't even thinking. Like, I was delighted. I was excited to see Omos, but I didn't think too much. I was like, I like New Day. They certainly deserve a WrestleMania moment, but I'm kind of like, you know, it'll just be kind of a grand match. You know what I mean? Nah, New Day were perfect for this. They're literally two people who are like perfectly charismatic enough to pull off like, oh fuck, this is Omos. You know what I mean?
They're also fan avatars as well. Do you know what I mean? Like they speak for us. You know, very good, because they'll make jokes that like no one else will make that we're making. You know, Jimmy has a very good point. There is someone who's done it. Nicholas.
Oh shit! Oh man, Nicholas absolutely ruining my moment. Fuck's
sake.
Great
show, Jimmy.
But I knew that someone. I knew somebody'd fuck that up. He fucked up all the youngest records as well. You're like youngest tag champion. It's like, oh, is it Renee Dupree? Is it Tyler Bate? Who's the youngest champion? Oh, it's Nicholas. Okay. We've already talked about Shane and Braun. And we've seen how excited I've gotten over three of those matches there so far. All right. Bad Bunny. Go on, Katie. What do you want to say about Bad Bunny?
I am so happy to have been proven right on this Bad Bunny situation. I have his fucking cheerleader since January. I have been singing his praises. I've been telling you that this is the strongest storyline on Raw going into WrestleMania. And you have no idea how happy I was watching this match. I was keen levels of excited watching this match. Because, like, I thought, now they've made it a tag match, we're going to get, like, Damian Priest, we're going to get a quick tag in, we're going to get a head scissors, and he tags back out. We got an actual superstar. Like, that is one of the best wrestling debuts I have ever seen. He got in, he did a shine, and then he took all of the heat. You know what I mean? That is extremely hard to do. There are people working years who couldn't take a heat as good as he did. Like, his selling, his positioning, just everything. And, like, look, the moves he was doing were, like, kind of the standard moves that you give to newer people to make them look flashy. Your tornado DDTs, your satellite head scissors or whatever it's called. I'm sure
that was genius, though. That's credit to The Miz. That's what I mean. Genius.
The whole match was planned excellently because they are the big spots he should have been doing. What I popped more for was things like magical cradles. You know what I mean? Like, monkey flips onto his feet into like arm drags to the outside. I was like, he's fucking Ricky Steamboat. Like, this is so cool. And, like, I've heard complaints that Damian Priest didn't get to do enough, right? I maybe would have liked a little bit more Damian Priest, but he's the one who gets to build off this match now. And we've already talked about how good I think the offshoot is from this match. But, like, when he did the Canadian destroy, I have never popped a destroyer in a match, but when he did one on the outside, I was like, that is exactly how this should be used. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That has taken Morrison out. That has genuinely popped me. That has finished someone. That is how you use a Canadian destroyer. And then you get back in the ring and, like, he pins Miz, previous world champion Miz. You know what I mean? Like, and as much as I'm singing Bad Bunny's praises, Morrison and Miz were unbelievable in this match. Like, this is why I say the Miz is the greatest wrestler in the world. Like, they made him look like a superstar. Like, I've seen bad takes on Twitter. Like, you know, a former world champion really shouldn't be getting bet up by a celebrity. I was like, Miz just had the match of his fucking life. That is Miz's best WrestleMania match.
Yeah.
And he has main evented WrestleMania with John Cena. That is his best WrestleMania match. And it's just, it made me so happy. I just absolutely love that it blew everyone away. I love how entertaining it was. And, like, that is definitely the best celebrity involvement I have ever seen in WrestleMania. And I don't think it'll ever be beat. It was so fucking good.
Oh. It was actually, like, it was a masterpiece. Like, it was legitimately, like, and like, I'm not gonna turn around. I'm not gonna turn around and say that was, like, it's going to be people's favorite WrestleMania match or anything like that. But, like, for what they had and what they, like, did, like, and how they, like, because here's the thing, like, you know, you can look at it, and anyone who's trained looks at it and goes, tornado DDT, you know, the head scissors and stuff like that. That's all stuff that kind of essentially, you know, anyone can do that because it relies on the other person, like, literally carrying you. They were literally carrying him around at certain times. But, like, the way they composed that match, fans don't know that. Like, to fans, tornado DDT, now a lot of the more educated fans will, but to, like, fans, tornado DDTs are like, oh, the person just, like, grabs their head and spins around. It's like, no, like, if the other person carries them, if you're doing a tornado DDT, the thoughts going through your mind are, whee! Because, like, that's how it feels. Like, it definitely doesn't feel like you're attacking someone. But they, like, the way they put it together, and the way they gave him, like, little spots, they only had to teach him how to do three moves. Like, he had to learn how to do Laugh Mahoustral and then the Canadian Destroyer, which, again, is something that looks really impressive, but is actually, like, really easy to do. A lot of the work is more on the taker than anything. And then it's also the Falcon Arrow. He got that done in three moves. But, like, he looked absolutely amazing. Nobody is, like, again, you're the first person I've heard that's, like, giving Miz credit for it. And, like, that's a perfect heel match, though, but because that's the job of a heel. You're not supposed to walk away from it going, oh, wasn't the heel so good? You're meant to walk away going, the face is amazing, but the heel does all the work to make them look amazing. You know what I mean? So that is a masterclass in how to do those matches. Absolutely loved it. No, fantastic.
Kian, did you like it?
Yeah, I liked it, yeah.
All right.
I was about to say, that was actually the best debut I've seen since Omos. So, like, that was... I would also say, I really appreciated, like, Bad Bunny, like,
You know what I mean? Like I mentioned earlier, the amount of wrestlers that like didn't get a spot at WrestleMania. But the reason I mentioned the Shane McMahon Braun match and not this one is because Bad Bunny obviously brought something different. He obviously showed it like a level of respect. He was well aware, like as a fan of it, like what it means to have a WrestleMania match, and he gave it everything he possibly could. And then you look at like, again, I'm not a big fan of like Damian Priest or like even Miz and Morrison, but it's like they were perfect for that match. Do you know what I mean? Like if you put someone else in there, it's not really the same thing. You know what I mean? So I thought it was really well done. I thought everyone did an excellent job. And going then, I think the only match left from night one is the main event. Sasha Banks versus Bianca Belair for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Any thoughts on this?
So good. The whip heard all around the world. What the hell is Bianca's hair made of? That was incredible. But not only that, like that's the Mania moment. And I loved it because what a unique Mania moment that's so specific to them that you can never like, it's not going to be duplicated. You know what I mean? You're not going to have Hulk Hogan come out and recreate that next year. Do you know what I mean? It's a move that only Bianca Belair can do, but it is definitely a WrestleMania moment. But no, fantastic. Loved every second of it.
I cried all the way through. I just like that, but
you just hate Bianca Belair. You're like, I don't want her to win.
That's the women's main event that, like it just meant so much on so many levels, and it was so good. And like the hair whip, like everything made so much sense. Like yeah. The hair whip, like it was basically like Sasha, get the fuck off my hair, because all of her offense had been like countering by grabbing her hair and yanking it around. It was just like that exclamation point of like, stop, like just cough on, just stop. But I don't know if this is true or not, but I read after the match that Sasha's gear included tributes to Alicia Fox and Naomi as two influential black female wrestlers who had gone before her. And if that is true, like, there was just so much in that match, you know, and like the pre-match moment before the bell rang, where the two of them are just welling up and you understand what this match means, you know what I mean? Not just to them, but to everyone watching. And it was just,
They're trying not to smile at each other as well. They're trying so hard. You can see it in their face where they're looking at each other and they just want to cry and hug. And they're just trying to just stay in character. But that made it so much more real because they're just like, I feel how you feel now.
it's like what we talked about before with the Fiend and Orton, where like you don't care about the build because the match can blow you away. For me, that's what that was. Like I've been very vocal. I didn't like the build for this match. But like, that makes up for everything, you know, like all sins forgiven. That was just that was my number one on my entire Mania week of matches.
Did you see the moment after the match as well where Sasha Banks is like openly smiling, like she's like,
yeah.
Moved to tears, I assume.
I just looked, the whole thing was a lot. All right.
I think most of us are tears. It's quite a big match, quite an emotional match, you know what I mean? So I don't know. It was a really, really good main event. It delivered, probably even surpassed expectations, you know what I mean? So that was really, really good. And that's it for night one. Night one, as you can imagine afterwards, I was fucking buzzing. I was out like, you heard me talk about like the middle of the card, especially like I was buzzing after this. Night two, man. There are two Rick Nashes in the chat, and I'm very intimidated, but I'm just going to continue. The Fiend we talked about, so I won't get into that again. The women's tag title match. Right, I know you might think, like, Keen, what are you buzzing about, right? I just thought it was cool that, for some reason, Tamina became, like, the Daniel Bryan of WrestleMania Night 2. Like, she just showed up, and everybody's like, you know what? We fucking love Tamina. And she got these like mad loud chants. And like there was moments in the match where you think they're gonna win. And like, oh, and they're proper like, come on, Tamina, come on, Natalya, you've got this. And it's like, yeah, all right. Like, I wasn't really expecting that. Come like, if you had said like anything to me, like, you know, about like what are your predictions for WrestleMania weekend, like Tamina and Natalya being like massive stars weren't, you know, that wasn't really one of them. But I'll absolutely take it. Fuck it. Like, I'd be up for everybody getting a pop like that at some point in their career. You know?
I think it was Tamina getting wrestling gear for her first time ever. I think it just signaled to people like, oh shit, like this is her time. Like
she got, yeah. Like they're
the thing about, new and fresh.
Yeah, and like the thing about Tamina and Natalya as well is that like they're clearly putting in like effort as like they're establishing themselves as a team, and they did that kind of in the run-up to this, in fairness to them. It wasn't just like, all right, here's one singles wrestler, here's another singles wrestler. They had like the matching gear, they had like, you know what I mean, all the kind of the team move, like the splash and then the shout. Oh, I asked, you know what? Big Tamina and Natalya fan, personally. I hope they go on to like, I hope they go on to batter Nia Jax in the next one. I hope
you've talked yourself into this point. We've heard Keane become a Tamina super fan. Evolution.
It was just a nice, wholesome moment. You know what I mean? It's like one of those things where I remember when like Dan Barry showed up to OTT and everyone just decided he's our guy now. You know what I mean? And it's just like he got these monster reactions. It's like I'd love every wrestler got to experience that at some point. You know what I mean? So I'm happy for Tamina. She's been around a long time as well. We talked about this, I think, like last week, didn't we? Like, she's been around years. So to have like a moment, a WrestleMania moment that she can kind of cherish, you know, for life now, I think is there's nothing negative about that whatsoever. You know what I mean? People had their own arguments about the result. I don't know. I mean, like, I would love Shayna to go on a singles run, but they're doing stuff at the moment with, like, you know, Asuka, Rhea, and Charlotte. So there's always, there's no rush. Yeah, I don't know. I liked it. What do we have? Oh, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. So the only note I have here is Logan Paul's involvement. And I wrote that down, again, like, from a podcast thinking, like, I was gonna hate this. Because, like, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, it's their sort of big WrestleMania match, and the whole thing is like, you know, cutting to Logan Paul every 5 seconds, like, oh, look at Logan Paul. And then when he made his entrance, what really pissed me off was like they had all these piped in cheers, and I was like, oh no, they're not actually gonna make it about him, make him the good guy. And I was like, oh no, come on, don't be like this. And the fans are booing him, but it almost felt like WWE were trying to like paper over that. And I was like, oh no, come on, this isn't Bad Bunny, this is Logan Paul, like, come on. They had a good match because it's Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Like, they're always going to gel well together. But it's the ending that I love. Like, fucking, obviously, Kevin Owens won. But then Logan Paul comes in. He's like, oh, well done, Kevin. You know, and oh, you're the man and all that. And Kevin, consistent to what he showed on SmackDown, showed absolutely, he had no fucking interest in Logan Paul to begin with. Shoved past him on SmackDown without attacking him. But then, and the best part of this is that everyone's expecting it. Everyone's ready. The crowd. They did this really well, because again, I think the crowd were in the same boat that I was in, where it's like they thought like he was going to be portrayed as the hero. So like, Kevin, come on, beat the shit out of this little cunt. Come on, beat the fuck out. Like, I'm not, come on, like, stunner, it's WrestleMania, come on. And then like they're waiting, and it was already only like less than a minute, but it felt like forever. It's like, come on, you know, come on, stun him. And then as soon as he hits it, everyone's like, fucking yes. That's what I loved about it's just the way they dragged it out. And this is the benefit of having like live fans again, you know what I mean? You need live fans for that moment to mean something, you know what I mean? That does not, in the Thunderdome, that does not do shit, you know what I mean? Like, it has to be in front of a live crowd, and it was just, the US title match was a match I wasn't really thinking of going in. I assumed Sheamus was actually losing going in. So I wasn't really like, I mean, I did back him. I was like, you know, again, like, because I predicted my heart. But in my head, I'm like, oh, they're not going to have Sheamus. I think that he's just, I don't know. I thought they were going to use it to make his opponent look stronger. But he won it in devastating fashion. And it was a really hard-hitting match. And Sheamus getting another US title run. You fucking love to see it. Like, I hope he has more interviews with the Irish lad again.
Also as well, like, if you're not a Matt Riddle fan, it was the perfect finish. You know, yeah, yeah. Like, it was almost as if they threw that in there, especially for it. So you're like, come on, Sheamus, kick that fucker in the face.
Oh, man, it was just... like, again, a match that, because the thing is, like, that was one of those matches where, like, for some of these matches I had expectations, but this was kind of like the Cesaro Rollins match where I'm kind of like, yeah, okay, I mean, it'd be grand. But then, like, you know, the result more than anything blew me away. I'm really, really happy with that. The Nigerian drum match, again, this is something where I imagine, like, I'm buzzing. Lots of people probably aren't, but I'm buzzing. The match itself was basically a regular hardcore match, which at first, because remember, we always talk about like how much we hype each other up during the week beforehand.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, oh, it's going to be a cinematic match. And I was like, yeah, oh my God, yeah. Yeah. And it's going to be like, they beat like the drum, and then it'll cut to, like, a drum, and then he'll win the title. And I was like, and I convinced myself last week that would be a good idea. Like, I was like, yeah, that would be I was like, that would be deadly. Who wouldn't want to see that? And it only dawned on me a few minutes into the hardcore match. I'm like, actually, thank fuck they did this. Yeah. They did this. This is actually way better than what I wanted. The match itself was very hard hitting, very brutal, different to what they've done before, and something that I felt like truly reflected how they were both feeling going into the fight. You know what I mean? They delivered, you know, going straight to the kendo sticks. You know what I mean? Or the kento sticks, maybe, if you want to shout out kento for some reason.
Sure.
just smacking them around with it. And like, and then the tables and all. And they didn't use any drums, which was a bit unfortunate. Would have liked a bit, you know. But the fact
they had
that,
a gong, like it was the closest thing they had. But no, that's not a way. You promise, like.
And the fact that, like, there was no ref there to be like, is that a drum? Is that a drum? No, it's more of a bass.
It's more of a boop than a bong.
Yeah. Right, I can't give that one a pull. I'm sorry. It's like VAR. It's like, now was this a dump or was this a bong? It's like the fans there waiting for like 10 minutes. Like, well, is it? It's like, I don't know. So we went with pinfalls instead, which I thought was probably a better thing in hindsight. What I loved about this was Big E looked strong as fuck. Big E lost nothing from this. You know what I mean? He did not lose fair and square. He lost by interference. And this is what I really love. The interference. First of all, I love Apollo Crews getting a title. I really, really wanted this iteration of Apollo Crews to flourish and for him to actually get something from it. So he has the gold now to back himself up, which I think is fucking excellent. Regardless of it, he might not have done it fair and square, but it is what it is. He did do it fair and square because he inspired someone to interfere in that match. You know what I mean? Dabba Kato, Raw Underground's own Dabba Kato, who once wrestled in NXT as Baba Tunde, someone who's Polish. I googled it; he's Polish, but his dad's Nigerian, so he obviously has the same heritage as Apollo. So obviously he sees Apollo representing Nigeria and he's like, this is fucking cool. I back this. Nice. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, when you think about it, it's a consequence of Apollo's actions. It wasn't just somebody Apollo, like, you know, said, oh, come back me up and we'll win fights together. It's obviously somebody who it makes sense. It wasn't just like a random addition. It's a subtle, but kind of like, you know, a very sensible, I feel, addition to Apollo Crews's kind of act, I suppose, at the minute. And I'm really, really looking forward to seeing Dabba Kato help Apollo retain in a lot of title defenses over the next year. I'm looking forward to more promos. I'm looking forward to more Apollo wins. And I'm looking forward to seeing Dabba Kato. I don't know if he'll still be called Dabba Kato, but we'll see anyway. I'm looking forward to seeing more of the two of them. I'm fucking big fans of both. So delighted with that one. Where are we now? We are at, my next note is Dabba fucking Kato, love heart, love heart, love heart, love heart. We have discussed that. The co-main event is next. So that, I thought this absolutely delivered a solid co-main event. Rhea Ripley versus Asuka for the Raw Women's title. I'm a big fan of Rhea Ripley winning. And this is one of those things where, like, a lot of people expected Asuka to retain. So it was a nice surprise, I thought. What did you think of the match?
Honestly, I said this on Twitter and I had very few people actually agreed. Rhea Ripley now, I've seen her wrestle some amazing matches, so it's not even a comment on her ability or anything, but it's just, I think, worth noting. For me, twice I've seen her in matches I've been really looking forward to, and twice I've left a feeling, that wasn't as good as it probably could have been. Like, I don't know what story is. It did leave me a little bit flat. Like, and again, I've seen her wrestle absolute bangers. Like, we talked about the Raquel Gonzalez match where she's the experienced one. So, like, again, like, she, it's not just that she's carried to these bangers, like, she's able to have more than able to have them herself. So it's just two WrestleMania matches that for me she's 0-2. And again, you have Asuka Charlotte, so you can't turn around and say, well, she's not getting the opposition. Like, she's getting some of the best wrestlers in the world. I don't know, it's just maybe something worth watching. But again, like, if you liked it, then that's fair too. I wouldn't take it away.
One and one, actually, because she won. It's not even that, like, I wouldn't even consider her, like, my favorite wrestler on the Raw roster, but I just wanted something different. Do you know what I mean? I know, like, some people might not be into Rhea versus Charlotte, but I am. Like, I think, like, it's better than having kind of, I know some people might disagree with me on this, but, like, if Asuka's facing kind of the same people again and again, kind of, it's, I don't know, like, I just feel like this is a way of changing it up, and I'm looking forward to seeing where they go. Katie, how do you feel about this?
I fell asleep for the middle of night two.
Fantastic.
I didn't go back and rewatch it because I somehow woke up and saw the result of every single match and then went back asleep. So it kind of killed a couple of the matches.
You didn't see the main event?
Oh no, I did see the main event.
Okay.
I've seen the whole main event. It was just the middle chunk, and then somehow always woke up at when the bell rang. I think that was making me wake up. So I ruined all the results on myself.
Just to clarify, you did see Omos' debut the night before though, yeah?
Oh, I saw all of night one. Look, there was just a lot of wrestling consumed last week, okay? And I just literally could not go back and fill in the blanks in night two. That's all.
It's okay. You're old. But to see, as long as you saw Omos' debut, that's the key. That's why I asked. And the main, wait a minute. Hold on a minute. You missed out on a big special moment. in between the co-main event and the main event.
What did I miss out on?
I mean, this is the most, probably the most talked about moment of WrestleMania. Bayley was out talking. Oh, I forgot to mention. Sorry. Started the show. It got piped in, but Hogan got booed out of his own home city.
Oh, yeah,
hilarious.
Yeah.
Absolutely hilarious. Just want to shot it in there.
Yeah. Loved it.
But this segment involved Bayley. I think Titus and Hogan. I could be wrong. But Bayley was out there. She was doing her thing, talking about not having a match. And we got to see the return. You were looking for... I know people were looking for it. They were saying, look, Ronda, don't care. Becky, don't care. The return I really want to see is the Bellas. And they came back. And I'll be honest, I did a bit of a Katie on it. I didn't watch it, so I don't know what happened. Once the music was like, rightio, main event it is.
It was quick. I couldn't have an issue with it. I was disappointed, obviously, it wasn't Becky, because that had been the rumor that had been going around all weekend. And Becky hadn't helped it by putting out like the big night one and night two tweets, which was amazing trolling by her. It was quick, so I can't be offended by it. Like, I thought it was what it was.
For me, like, it was once I heard the, because I was thinking, I was like, no, like, I'm not unhappy Becky and Ronda didn't come back. I'd rather see with shows with fans at them ahead, if you know what I'm trying to say. Like, without them having to go back to the Thunderdome, I'd be happy, like, if they extended it, whatever. But it's just because, like, we hyped ourselves up, because we're like, surely, like, Natalya and Tamina aren't going to win, like, the fucking turmoil tag. So somebody's going to return there. That'll probably be the Bellas. So, like, who's this going to be? You know what I mean? And you knew something big was going to happen, because it was, like, Bayley was out there, and it's before the main event. So I'm like, oh, my God, is this going to be Becky's? It's gonna be Becky. It's gonna be Ronda. Oh my God! Ronda. Oh my God! I'm like, who's this gonna be? Once I heard the music, I was like, right, main event. I'm not angry. I'm not even like that. I'm a bit disappointed, but like, it is what it is. We'll move on. it was a moment, you know, as you said. Like, it was a moment. It's not something I'd say like took away from the show. Just funny. That's what I just thought was funny. That's all. the main event, though. We started off with a fucking banging video package. It was just like, the video package got me so hyped. The way it cut from, like, it started off, like, the way it told the story, it started off with, like, Daniel Bryan, Edge, Roman Reigns, like, divided into sections. And obviously, like the SmackDown beforehand, they all cut, like, these very passionate promos that you know are going to be used in a video package. And you're waiting there, you're like, right, let's see the video package then. And, oh, man, here, like, Edge, man. Edge just nails it, you know what I mean? It's fucking Edge. Of course he knows, like, talking about his injury, talking about how long, like, it's the same story we've heard for the last over a year, but it just does not, you don't get tired of it, because you're not like, you know how much it means, like, for anyone who was on the journey, you know what I mean? Like, with him and seeing how much this whole thing means to him, and he's, it's just underrated video package, 10 out of 10. Watch it again, because it's good. Another thing, the pop for Edge. Ah, man, like, people were saying, like, oh, Edge's gonna get booed, and like, Daniel Bryan's gonna get cheered, and this and that. Like, the thing is, the interesting part was nobody knew, like, what reaction anyone was gonna get going in, because it's the first show in front of live fans in over a year. Like, and there's no way, like, there's no way of knowing, because, like, you know, social media is a bubble, Twitter, you're in your own bubble. If you go on Reddit, that's its own bubble. You know what I mean? Everywhere has its own bubble. You only get to see everyone together at the shows. So Daniel Bryan got kind of like a polite reception, you know what I mean, in the sense that, like, they didn't want him to be Edge, but they're like, right, we don't want to boo you either, you're there, hey, you know what I mean. Reigns got booed, which I thought was really, really interesting. It's like, he's the ultimate, like, exactly what they would want, you know what I mean? And it's, he, for me, is I didn't think he'd get those sorts of reactions, but getting those sorts of reactions, that makes him, for me, like, the best heel in the world right now, because he's incredibly entertaining, his segments are amazing, you want to watch him, you want to see him wrestle, you want to hear him talk, you want to see Roman Reigns do fucking everything. But at the same time, you're not cheering for him either. This is like the perfect heel, the perfect character they have at their hands right now. Oh my fucking God. And the perfect face to fight him in Edge. I don't give a fuck if he could have decapitated Daniel Bryan in the last SmackDown. Nobody's gonna boo him. Like, this is, and not only are they not gonna boo him, this is like a full on, like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, the first, like, I know we heard cheering and pops like earlier on in the night, but like, this is like the loudest pop of the night, I think. Yeah. And like, again, it's the first loud, like, aggressive pop of the night. I loved it. I loved it, loved it, loved it. So obviously then we get into the ring, everybody's staring each other down before the match starts, and immediately I'm like, this takes me to, like, the National Stadium. This, like, took me to, like, you know, when you'd be at OTT at the National Stadium, and, like, there's certain, you'd go through at the show and there'd be good matches, you know, all across the card. There'd be some matches, you know, one, like, some fans might love one match, other fans might be all over another match, and there'd be, you know, good reactions all throughout the night, but the main event is the match where, like, everyone is paying attention. Nobody's going for a piss, nobody's going for the, you know, for the smoke outside or anything like that. Everyone's watching, everybody's like, okay, this is legit, this is going down, you know what I mean? And like, it felt like, yeah, they were like wrestling matches, but this is the main event. This is the main event. This is the main event of the year, you know what I mean? In this case, and it felt like it. I'm just like, oh man, even when they have fans, you know what I mean? Even when they have fans for other WrestleManias, you don't always get that big fight feel. This was a massive, massive fight feel. This is like, oh, every second of SmackDown I have watched built up to this, and it was, it fucking paid off. This match was un-fucking real. I loved it. Oh my god, man. I don't even know like what to talk about. Like, at the, there's just so much. Like, I love the double spear. You can tell they were waiting ages to do that. They really wanted to do that. But, like, Goldberg and Roman was literally set up just so they could do that. Yeah. It looks fucking mean though, doesn't it? It looks like when they go into each other, it looks like they're clashing heads. Like, oh
yeah.
It's a rotten spot, but it is also kind of cool at the same time. So I'm like, that's deadly. One big moment I thought was hilarious is the double submission where
But this is what I wanted to talk about as well, because I don't think you and me had the same reaction to this, just by the way you're telling this.
Man, I laughed so hard when I locked in the submission on Roman Reigns, because it's like I was taking, like, don't get me wrong, like, I was taking it seriously, I was incredibly invested in this whole match, but like, this is kind of the comic relief part where, like, does Edge have him submission first?
No, because it's like, for me, the funny part is that Daniel Bryan's like, well, I can do it too, and just joining in.
Daniel Bryan has like the meanest kicks in like WWE, you know what I mean? He could dethrone Edge, like, he could detach his head with one kick while he has him in the submission and then go for himself, but he's like, this looks fun, I'm gonna join him.
Yeah, he's just, this is, he's living the threesome gimmick now.
it was foreshadowed. It's like he inserts himself in a match that otherwise he had no real belong in. Now
he literally inserted himself in a submission hold that he was.
So I had a different reaction. I got upset at this spot because I had just been saying to Phil, like, I was getting a bit emotional watching. I was like, I cannot believe we have these three men back. You know what I mean? Like the injuries, the cancer, everything. I was like, I cannot believe we had this. And I cannot believe they're putting on a match of this caliber. And then they had the submission locked on, and then they broke it, right? By Edge and Daniel Bryan starting to just loaf each other. And I was like, I mean, Edge, your neck. Daniel Bryan, your head. What the fuck he is doing? You don't need to die for us. Like,
There was so much of that, though. Daniel Bryan doing the fucking headbutts. You're like, stop. Stop now. This isn't fun. No, stop it.
The concertos as well. I was just like, guys, I love this match, but you are making my heart jump out my chest. This isn't fair.
I loved all that. When you are saying, no, stop, I'm like, do it. It's for the title. It's the main event of Mania. You need to do this.
Yeah. It does work from that standpoint. Like, it makes you more invested. Like, it makes you care.
I'm like, you can tell because they went, there was no holding back. It's the main event of WrestleMania. Like, now, obviously, I'm not saying they shouldn't hold back, but like, again, I have no control over it either way. They decided to do it. So I'm going to happen. Like, well, fuck it. I got so into this. I'm like, oh my fucking God. And you know what I love about this as well? Jey Uso being a fucking competent, a fucking like actual quality henchman. You know what I mean? Mm. Normally, particularly when you see like main events of WrestleMania, it's like if this is say like the Hurt Business, for example, like, or Shelton and Cedric would come out and then they'd get super kicked or something and it'd be like, wait, or you'd seen it before with like Gallows and Anderson with AJ Styles when they were like a trio. You'd always see them get like, here's Gallows and Anderson. Oh, they got their head kicked in and now we're back to the match. Do you know what I mean? Whereas like, Uso was a problem. Uso was taking him out at the start and they had to take him out. And then even still, he came back for more and ended up being the difference maker. What I thought was really interesting was that I'm using air quotes, I say predicted Roman Reigns. It was kind of like I was hoping Roman Reigns was going to win. Part of me, when I saw Jey Uso cleaning house, I was like, oh fuck, this is where Jimmy Uso comes back. I was so ready. I was like, Jimmy Uso is going to, like, I'm so ready. I'm like, he's going to super kick Uso, he's going to cost Reigns. I'm like, fuck, I really want Reigns to win, but fuck, there's no way it's happening. And then Reigns just killed him. He just gets the fucking concertos out for the lads, beats the fuck out of him. Pins them both, leaving no doubt. He's like, this is not a fucking, oh, but you didn't pin me. Oh, you didn't beat me. It's like, I pinned you both. Fuck off. I'm fighting someone else at Backlash, dickheads. And it's gas because, like, was it even legal pin? Who cares? Like, if the ref on any other night could easily just stop it because both of them are incapacitated. So who fucking cares if it's a legit pin or not? He battered them, killed them, murdered them. God!
Again, just to answer that, like, from a real, like, and I'm sure Foxy, if he's listening, will back us up here with the real book. But as a former ref myself, both of their shoulders were down and he covered them. Like, that would be considered a draw if they weren't, you know what I mean? Like, if Roman Reigns wasn't in that situation and the ref counted, that'd be a draw because both men's pins are validly down. So him covering them is legitimate. So it is a legit pin. But I like the debate. I love getting into these discussions with people where everyone has an interpretation.
Oh, sorry. So he's on. Oh, so it is a legit. I thought you meant like it would end in a draw, which would be really funny. It's like, and your winner, everyone. It's like, no. That's probably what it's going for.
No, but if they can pin each other, then it stands to reason that he can sit over them. If they're like their shoulders are validly down and they're covering each other, that's what would happen. See, so him laying over them is a valid cover.
See, if it was Edge that. If it was like Edge's pin, they were counting and Roman Reigns comes in on top of him. You know, it's not like, oh, they both win or they both this or that, or it's not a clean cover. It wouldn't be a clean cover for Edge. But for Roman, yeah, I suppose it is. Yeah. No one ever really goes for the I'm going to kill both of you just because I can route. So it does throw up a whole wide range of scenarios. Personally, I, as you can tell by the enthusiasm in my voice, I love this main event. This was the best WrestleMania main event since 31. I was absolutely all over it. This was... the most, like, for me, this felt like the most important WrestleMania in like forever. I can't remember the last time there's been a WrestleMania this important, because we've never experienced anything like this. You know, the first live WWE event with fans in over a year. When did we ever think we'd say that? You know what I mean? But it ended up, and there was just so many factors, like so much uncertainty going into it. It's like, is this gonna live up to expectations? And I fucking completely exceeded mine anyway. I was so not. Night one was a banger, night two was a banger. And the thing as well, I look at it, it's like this time last year, we left WrestleMania, and I don't know if you remember me at the time where I was like, all right, that was my wrestling for the pandemic's over. I'm never watching it again. I hate it. I like the Firefly Funhouse match. It's gas. It's like, I liked the Bray Wyatt match, but I hated everything else. It was shite. And I have no time for wrestling ever again. Whereas now I'm like, yes, the Fiend match was shite, but I'm like, this is what we have to look forward to when like the pandemic's over. Now, obviously, not every show is going to be, you know, like the Mania night two triple threat or night one main event. But I'm so happy. I'm just so happy.
As Katie said earlier, it was like with the crowd and everything, it was a much needed return to normal. There was, even the way you could see them responding to the weather alert and the fact that they didn't panic and shit the bed, and they kind of made it a feature.
Imagine.
Yeah, they made it a feature. They made it a thing, and they were operating from a position of confidence. Like, I think UFC are going to do a full arena show without any protections in place in the next couple of weeks. I'm not going to feel comfortable watching that. Like, I read an interview with an epidemiologist this week who said, this is irresponsible, there's no benefit to it, and there's no reason. It's purely for money, it's greedy, and there's no medical basis to say this is safe on any level. Whereas at WrestleMania, I felt... yeah, this is safe. Yeah, this is, I feel I can relax watching this. I don't have to feel tense the entire night like I will watching UFC with no restrictions in place. I felt like they were confident. They were in control of it. They were confident in themselves even when shit went wrong. And as such, I could relax into it and I could think to myself for the first time since the start of this, this is going to be over soon. This, like, and it wasn't just a wrestling show. It was that. It was a sense of normalcy, and it was a sense of, oh man, there's light at the end of the tunnel. We're getting wrestling back. There's real fans there. It's being done. Like, I feel like this isn't a super spreader event. I'm going to see Premier League matches with fans in a few weeks. We're at the end game now, lads. We're at the end game. And the fact that everything delivered to the point that it did, I agree with everything you say, and minor that a quibble I've already kind of brought up. So I don't have much else to add. But it was, that's what I loved about this WrestleMania. Not just the amazing in-ring stuff, and I'm so glad that it delivered, but just the feeling of fans' excitement, energy. It was very easy to get cynical before it and be like, oh, back in business and this and that and the other. It's like, WWE just want money. Maybe it's not safe. But now at the other side of it, I'm like, no, I hook, line, and sinker, I buy into their marketing and everything around it. I love every second. I had a really good weekend, and I'm so glad that I'm so glad with how it turned out.
Katie, how do you feel after waking up after WrestleMania?
After waking up, well, seriously, I just consumed so much wrestling this week. Like night two was preceded by hours and hours of a WrestleMania watch along as well. So, like,
yeah.
I mean, I mean, a credit to me is what I'm going to say. I am going to leave you with my top five matches.
Oh, yeah.
So my number one was Sasha and Bianca from night one of WrestleMania. Nice. Number two was the triple threat from night two. Number three was Walter and Ciampa from TakeOver night one. Number four, Bad Bunny, Damian Priest versus Miz and Morrison. Number five, Noam Dar and Tyler Bate from NXT UK. And then my honorable mentions were Cesaro and Rollins and Raquel Gonzalez and Io Shirai from TakeOver.
Nice. So
they won my. I don't think anyone can shout at me for that either. I think that's a solid, solid top seven.
Like, I'm just. This WrestleMania, like, I'm kind of. Like, I wouldn't. Personally, I don't think it was safe, but as somebody who stayed at home, watched it in my own room, did the responsible thing myself, this will, for me, go down as like one of my absolute favorite WrestleManias. And, oh, by the way, side note, night two has to be the way moving forward. Like, two nights forward has to be the way. I actually looked at the last WrestleMania party we had, the card for that, yeah? Mm. Sick. Like, you talk about, Kate, you talk about, like, falling asleep, like, you know, with two nights. 16 matches in one night, including like 25 minutes of Triple H and Batista. So hopefully, if this is the format they continue it moving forward, and again, we're talking after the pandemic, and we're talking like full audiences and all that, and heel Roman Reigns at his peak, and all this other shit that's happening. Omos, double champ, maybe next year, who knows? So much support. Loved it. Excellent.
Let's leave it with your guys' thoughts. So Joe says, found out during the week that Kevin Patrick is from Rohini and went to school with a few people I know. Deadly. Owen Davis says, after my trip was cancelled last year, my favourite part of Mania was the shade and pride of knowing that the people in my seat were soaking wet and cold all night. Chloe asked Rick or Keane who would be able to pull off set suits.
Oh, easy. No, I'll explain this one, right? Look, I know I have the hair. But like Rick wears suits and I don't. I'd put it on backwards or something. Trust me. Like
I'd say Katie would probably pull it off better. I could imagine Katie in the fire suit.
I've been taking note of his suits. He looks fantastic lately.
Keen, you've just the all hyped here. Well, by the way, Mitchell says that bro kick was an absolute thing of beauty. Kento says double submission reminded him of Benoit and Jericho with the walls crossface in the chamber on Triple H. Katie shoots on WrestleMania watch along.
I loved it. Dave
says easily the best WrestleMania since 31, arguably better. And Jamie says they haven't stated an official day for next year, so hopefully they are now two nights rather than just the pandemic's unpredictability. I think they've left it there because they always announce a night for WrestleMania. I think they even announced a night this year, but then they changed it to two nights. So the fact that they've left that open, I'm thinking the exact same, Jamie. Absolutely fantastic stuff. Corporate Keane, what a way to sign off on a WrestleMania review.
The other gas thing is as well. When you said, Keane, do you want to cover WrestleMania? I was like, yeah, sounds good. But in my head, I'm like, I might not have that much to say, though. You know what I mean? Like, I might be like, oh, that was grand. Well,
that was quite good. 45 minutes. So I love it. And I'm going to listen even more because, guys, we're actually off next week. I think it's the first time since we brought the show back in 2018. Now, we've pre-recorded best of shows and stuff over Christmas and stuff, but I think it's the first time we won't have a Wednesday show in nearly 3 years. So I think we're due 1 week just to kind of recharge a little bit because, like I said, we've all watched a lot of wrestling lately and we want to come at it from a standpoint where we're kind of hyped to do the show. So we're just going to take a 1 week break next week. But in the meantime, I will, like, in the absence of stuff to listen to, I'll be listening to personally, and I hope you guys will too. We'll consider listening to the Keane Fabe Wrestling podcast on Corporate Keane's new Patreon page, so check that out. There's loads of great offers up there. Keane, just talk people through quickly what they can get if they subscribe.
It's a
new podcast.
There's a podcast that's there as well. Kento says great sale, Keane. I know, I'm a proper businessman. You see, I've done a business course now, and part of that is sales. So I'm selling this well. There's different stuff on different tiers. I can make you your own custom theme song.
Love it.
Obviously, you may be aware I'm a banging musician. I can play every instrument and sing every chord. I can do fancy booking for you. If you give me a custom fancy booking scenario, I can give you an audio podcast of your own. Amazing. For whatever scenario you give me. There's the podcast, there's drawings. I will draw shit for you if you want
scoops.
Insights, very good journalistic inside scoops and pay-per-view spoilers, because my predictions are spoilers. So and a shout out at the end of my videos if I can squeeze you into the end screen. It's already kind of full, but thank you.
Love it. Gorber Keane, check him out on Patreon. The amount of work he puts in, and I think after hearing him get so hyped up, like the experience he gives us and the enjoyment, the perspective he gives us, he's someone who deserves your support. And guys, if you enjoy this or if you like the sound of this, also as well, keep in mind that you can join along every Wednesday. Not next week, but the following week. We do this every week if you've enjoyed being in the Zoom tonight. So by all means, check that out. It's available to all of our Patreon subscribers as well. In the meantime, guys, we're going to have Ask Low Blows, a very special Low Blows 7th anniversary. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back on Friday or in a few seconds if you're in the Zoom with us. But in the meantime, there's only one way to play this out. Until a couple of weeks from now, thank you yet again for over 300 flagship episodes. We'll get nostalgic in the next bit. We'll have a special guest as well. But in the meantime, that's the bottom line, because Low Blows said so.
Right, moving on to the last big story of the week. It's been a quiet enough week, but this is a very strange one. And Jade, I'm going to ask you, try not to talk about the thing you really want to talk about in this story, okay?
Okay.
All right, there's one detail in this that you're going to want to focus on, but it's a serious story. So try not to focus on that detail, even though it's all you'll want to think about.
Oh, okay.
Jamie Noble last week was stabbed in a trailer park.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Your thoughts. Don't talk about the thing you want to talk about.
What? That you got stabbed in the trailer park?
Yeah.
Why shouldn't... That's what we're talking about, though.
Yeah, no, like, you got stabbed. Like, that's a very serious thing.
It is very serious.
Yeah, in a trailer park. Don't talk about it. We're not allowed to mention it because you got stabbed. It's serious.
But, like... The trailer park... You can't not talk about it.
Like, the struggle is real. James' face is like,
Trailer park.
Okay, here's what happened, right? I'll read the story.
Okay.
The Mercer County Sheriff's Office is listed as saying Gibson, his real name is Gibson, returned home this morning.
What a weird name to have, like, Gibson.
How is that weird?
I don't know. It doesn't look like a Gibson.
What does he look like?
Jamie Noble, like, you know what I mean?
It's because he is Jamie Noble.
Yeah, like. Exactly, but like, Gibson.
What if you heard, what other, like, wrestlers' names would detract you? Like, Brock Lesnar, if his second name wasn't Lesnar and it was like Jones. Brock Jones.
Oh, no. No.
Other wrestlers'
name. Perry Saturn. That's just a weird name in both
Perry
ways.
O'Neill.
Perdy O'Neill.
He fit in and drink.
Drink all the Guinness. We can't have any more kegs.
Yeah, his name's Gibson anyway. There you go. After a long drive, left the house to get a snack while his girlfriend took a bath. Don't talk about it. I'm thinking the same thing.
I'm thinking of the bath.
Yeah, I know.
He got stabbed.
He got stabbed. Jade, stop laughing at a man getting stabbed.
I just want to make up pretty nice when I heard that.
Jade. Jamie Noble got stabbed here. Stop laughing.
In a trailer park.
About a man getting stabbed. Stop.
Oh my god, I feel so bad for the guy.
Not okay. He got stabbed
while he was getting snacks and his mat was in a bath.
Anyway.
In a trailer.
His girlfriend was in the bath.
Oh my god.
Upon his return to the mobile home car park, a driver pulled up beside his car. He got stabbed. And started
crying. I'm actually crying.
Yelling at him for cutting him off the road.
I'm bringing this with me. I need to get tissue.
The story is that Gibson apologized, but the two men in the other car continued to yell at him. Gibson took one of them down, and two more men got out of the car. One pulled out a knife and stabbed Gibson in the upper back and mid spine. Jesus,
ouch.
There you go. See, he got stabbed.
Stop it, okay?
Why is that a trigger for you to break into laughing?
I hate hate you so much. Gibson, this is your doing.
Gibson was rushed.
Oh my god.
Gibson was rushed to the emergency room. The story said he's no longer in the emergency room, but was still hospitalized. So seems like he'll make a full recovery here.
Thank
but
god.
Just
now
shocking and not hilarious. No update on how his girlfriend's bath went. If she used salts.
Bath bombs.
If she used actual salt.
Or an actual bomb. If she...
Oh, God. We wish Jamie no more.
Randy Savage didn't have sex with Stephanie McMahon. They're only rumors. You can't prove it. Anyway. She was really developed for a 14-year-old.
That's it.
What's he supposed to do? Ask for ID? Oh, wait, it never happened. He was a legend.
The one to beat.
Question one. Chris Jericho.
Rey Mysterio.
Chris Jericho.
Trish Stratus.
Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho.
Rhino?
Chris Jericho. You haven't got it. Question two. Dom Tuck. Dom Tuck.
Tom.
Dom Tuck.
Tom Cook. Who's Tom Cook?
Tom Tuck.
Filthy Tom Lawler.
Dom Tuck. Dom Tuck.
Dom Tuck. Dom Tuck.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. Question three. Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns.
Yes, he's getting the hang of this, Katie. You're already. Question four. Nikki Cross. Nikki Cross.
Seth Rollins.
Nikki Cross.
Is Seth Rollins?
Nikki Cross.
Oh. I'm sorry, the song distracted me.
That's the point.
Jay Money.
It's not Jay okay. Money. Question five. LJ Cleary. This is going to be
Mark Henry.
LJ Cleary.
Oh.
LJ Cleary.
LJ Cleary?
Yeah, there you go.
The peak-ass couldn't
question, it's the connection. Question six. Charlotte. Charlotte.
Jack.
Charlotte.
Jack.
Charlotte.
Any wrestler's called Jack. Charlotte. I don't know any wrestler's called Jack.
Charlotte.
What?
Charlotte. Charlotte. No, okay. Question seven. Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt.
You see, he's Bray covering Wyatt. The microphone. Like,
Bray Wyatt.
What? Bray Wyatt.
There you go. Question eight. Ric Flair. Ric Flair. Ric Flair. Ric Flair.
Judy Bagwell.
Question nine. Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch.
Becky Lynch. Ben Given. Ben Given. Any other wrestlers called Ben?
Lynch.
Ben.
Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch.
Minnie McKenzie.
Question ten. Eric Rowan. Eric Rowan. Eric Rowan.
Ed.
Eric
Edge.
Rowan.
Edge.
Eric
Christian.
Rowan. Eric Rowan. Eric Rowan.
Braun Strowman.
Eric Rowan. Eric Rowan.
Very lost.
Eric Rowan.
John Cena.
Eric Rowan.
Randy Orton.
Eric Rowan. Eric Rowan. Okay. You can take them off. You
my favorite off. Part of all that is how he'd make a guess and then look at me like baby Yoda.
I was so lost. Was I talking loud there?
Yes.
Yeah, I couldn't because that's a proper mind fuck that is. If I knew that was the song, I would have chosen a different song. That's a good strategy.
That's the point.
That was a loud song as well.
How many did you get? You got Dom Tuck, you got Roman Reigns, you got LJ Cleary. Did you get Bray Wyatt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got Bray Wyatt. You didn't get Ric Flair, Becky Lynch, and you didn't get Eric Rowan.
Yeah, no, I like it's just a different world when you've got the headphones on.
Katie, I want you to step into that world. The song of choice you had was, try them on there.
To the surprise of no one.
The song, yeah, it is I'm Not Okay.
Katie, with the headphones.
Okay, that's not something you're supposed to struggle with. Putting on the headphones is a really basic
part of
press.
The challenge.
We're gonna have I'm Not Okay by My Chemical Romance as well. The headphones are they're like sound. They kill the sound.
Yeah,
as well,
no so. Shit, man. Yeah. I don't know what you're saying.
All right, Katie, check the... Right, she's okay on this side. Is she okay on your side?
Yeah. Can she hear us now?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, but the song isn't playing. The song's playing now.
Okay, because I want to point out something, but if I point it out now, it'd be like...
Point it out. It's gone.
No, I can't.
She can't hear a word you're saying.
Right now?
Yeah.
Just a second. Katie, you can't hear what I'm saying.
Okay, we're good. We're good. Okay.
I've accidentally picked like my favorite wrestler. I should have picked someone less obvious.
Well...
Are we started?
Question one.
Okay.
Eric Rowan.
See, that's what I mean. Too
question
obvious.
Question two. Allison Kay.
Oh, come on, Katie.
ABBA.
Oh my God. Are you?
Allison Kay.
Alistair.
Allison Kay.
Asuka.
No. Oh my God, Katie.
Question two.
My favorite.
LJ Cleary.
It is three.
LJ Cleary.
Come on, Katie.
LJ Cleary.
Anna Bledda.
Who's that?
LJ Cleary. No.
I don't know what you're saying.
Okay, Katie, you're shouting. She can't hear me.
Raven Creed.
It's four.
Yeah. Raven
Creed. You're laughing. I don't know.
Raven Creed.
Be a professional. Stop laughing.
Raven Creed. There you go. Right. Killer Cross.
Oh, shoot. Won't get this one.
Killer
definitely
Cross.
Won't.
Lacrosse? Like the game?
Killer Cross. He's actually so close. Killer Cross. Killer Cross. No, okay.
No.
Eddie Kingston.
Akeem.
Akeem. That was my guess. I'm a big Akeem fan.
Eddie Kingston.
Alistair?
No, stop getting Alistair.
Why did you pick Alistair four times?
Why are you shouting at me?
Big Rab. There you go, too. Owen Richards.
Yeah. Fuck off. Is that the one she gets?
Leo Rush.
Oh, this is bollocks.
This is the one to win. Bobby Lashley.
Wanker.
Oh, you won.
Absolute wanker. I'm pissed. I'm actually raging.
You won. Five right. You won.
I'm raging. I'm actually like...
You did not realize how loud you were.
Oh, really?
You were screaming. You were a proper screaming.
Sure. Beat up a pheasant up. That's why you were laughing.
I was trying to... I went... Katie, would you stop shouting? I really always can't hear you.
Amazing. Last thing about WrestleMania parties. So every year, this is kind of a thing where people get in touch with us people always get onto us and they're like, "Ooh, someone's hosting another WrestleMania party. What do you think about this? A bit of competition?" And it's like, no, I don't mind. Like, it's grand. Like, let them. It's fine. Like, this happens every year. Like, but we had, I started getting trolls there at the weekend. Where people are getting onto me from a particular party and they're like, mention us. You got to talk about us on your podcast. You don't want us to talk about it. So I'm like, I don't know what to do. You're putting me in a position where I'm the bad guy if I don't talk about you. And I'm the bad guy if I do.
Mm.
So they sent me an ad. And they're like, just play this and we'll be happy. So I don't know. I didn't know what to do. I'm like wrestling promotions don't do this. You don't go to OTT and see CCW posters.
That's it. Like,
you don't go to WrestleMania and see an advertisement for pro wrestling tees. Like, yeah. No one else does it, but we're going to do it. They sent us an ad. They want us to talk about it. We'll talk about it. Guys, this is the other WrestleMania party.
Coming to a pub you've never heard of. Hosted by people you don't know. Charging a lot and advertising a little. It's Derek Mania!
Hey guys, it's me,
Derek. You may remember me from my world famous WWF, WCW, TNA, but not ECW because I didn't watch it, table quizzing, or my Twitter heel turn last year for just 77 euros 54 cents, which includes an empty pint glass, no alcohol. You can watch WrestleMania with me and my friend Mark. DJ Ken Shamrock, not the real one, it's some lad from Crumlin, will be playing teams such as Shawn Michaels, Hulk Hogan, and Shawn Michaels again, until late in the evening. We're also going to stand around to talk about how competition is a good thing. It'll be so cheap too. There'll be cheap drink, cheap food.
There's no food!
Food so cheap it doesn't exist. You'll leave WrestleMania thinking, wow, I feel so cheap. Tickets available now, somewhere.
We're not sure yet how we're selling tickets, but we're gonna have tickets, I think.
Spend the biggest night at a wrestling calendar with us, Derek and Mark, in Derek-a-mania! Or should it be Derek and Mark-mania? I don't know. We didn't think. Join us, hashtag Derek-a-mania!
Can I quit my job and go there, please?
77 euro 54 cents.
Yeah, but like if I work there, I get to go for free.
Yeah, this is look. You know, I can't. Yeah, look. Derek, you've done it again.
It's stupid. It's too big of a deal not to pass.
I think of all the Shawn Michaels songs you get to hear.
Sexy boy.
And sexy boy. All right, lads. You said specifically to me. You said mention us. I mentioned you there.
It's just a podcast. Nothing crazy. We literally earn 0 cents for this.
Yeah, it's a bit OTT asking us to do a whole desire clip for it, but sure. Look, Tom, we'll give it a go. Oh, God, here comes a little bit.
Usually just tape the show. I have a glass of TK Red Lemonade. Rick likes to drink Boost, I think.
I do like Boost. I find it gives me energy. Energy. Energy.
Can you stop saying energy?
Sorry. Hello, my friend. We'll meet again. It's been a while. Where should we begin? Feels like forever.
I can talk with my mouth full.
Yeah, so like I was saying about Boost earlier, it used to come in a grey bottle, but they've since updated to a much sleeker blue and black design.
Yeah, you're right. Now, it really modernises the brand.
It does, doesn't it?
During the show, I like to Google weird animal facts. Like, for example, Rick, did you know that the venom of a king cobra is so strong that 1 gram can kill a person 150 times over?
How could they possibly have discovered that? If a person is dead, they're dead.
It says it here.
That's a random website. Anyone could make that up. To know that for sure, they'd have to kill the same person 150 times or just make up the amount that killed him once.
Look, I'm not a snake expert, but...
The point is, though, that when a person is dead, they're dead. There's no degrees of deadness. I'm 100% alive right now. I'm not 97% alive and 3% dead. You're either dead or alive.
I found the show was a real emotional help for me when I left 98FM by mutual consent.
Yeah, you were sacked.
Yeah, but mutually sacked.
Yeah, and also sacked. You'd still work there if you had a choice. That's not mutual.
We've both decided that it would be mutually beneficial for me to take a break.
Why did you need this as an emotional help then?
Why are you being a dick, man?
I'm just saying.
I have a rainbow colored dildo.
And the guitar is getting a bit intense here, isn't it?
I honestly don't think we've said a single useful thing that should be in a Desire clip.
Except for your Cobra facts. Give us another one. People will be tweeting like...
It was on a website!
I don't even like Creed!